taking on another time. Baby, start me up. Baby, start me up. Baby, start me up. You make a dead man come. You make a dead man come. You make a dead man come.
Quality News Network. President Bush continues to meet with top military officials to decide whether to change his Iraq war policy. However, he said today he would not be rushed into that decision. Earlier in the day, he met with senior Pentagon leaders who called for more equipment and training for the Iraqi forces. Yesterday, President Bush heard from the top generals in Iraq via video conference. They suggested that the U.S. cannot follow the Iraq Study Group's recommendation of withdrawing a large number of U.S. combat troops from Iraq by 2008 because the Iraqi forces won't be ready by then. The Washington Post reports that the Army and Marine Corps will ask for permanent increases in personnel levels when incoming Defense Secretary Robert Gates takes office next week. Senior officers say that the current U.S. military strategy has demanded more resources than they have. In the most recent Washington Post ABC News survey, close to 8 out of 10 Americans favor a change in the Iraq war policy from a combat role to a training role for U.S. troops, as was suggested by the Iraq Study Group. The New York Times reports today that if the U.S. pulls out troops from Iraq, Saudi Arabia may financially support Iraq's Sunnis in their fight against the Shiites. Right after Thanksgiving, Saudi Arabia's King Abdullah summoned Vice President Dick Cheney to tell him that. An official said when the two met, the king read Cheney, quote, the riot act. Around Baghdad today, at least 23 people were killed in attacks, including a car bomb blast at a bus stop during the morning rush hour. In the Gaza Strip today, a Hamas commander who served as a judge was killed by Palestinian gunmen. He was shot outside of the courthouse. CNN is reporting that South Dakota Senator Tim Johnson, a Democrat, has been hospitalized after suffering stroke-like symptoms. The 59-year-old senator was taken from his Washington, D.C. office to the hospital by ambulance today. The incoming chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Democrat Patrick Leahy, warned the Bush administration to expect tougher oversight of its strategy in the war on terror. The federal raids of six Swift & Company meatpacking plants in six states yesterday connected to identity theft led to the arrest of nearly 1,300 illegal immigrants. The crew aboard the Space Shuttle Discovery conducted the first spacewalk of their trip successfully. Today they will prepare for one of the most significant tasks of their 12-day mission to rewire the International Space Station. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business News, coming up next.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of the Duplication Connection, and I'm here to ask you a question. Has one of your friends or relatives sent you a DVD from another country and you discover that it won't play in your machine? At the Duplication Connection, we can convert any country-coded DVD to play in the U.S. We can also convert your DVDs to play in any country on the planet. Call me at the Duplication Connection at area code 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
Don't dread the Fed. Sure, the Federal Reserve is raising interest rates. Seems like it happens every day around noon. But does that affect your home loan? Not necessarily. Talk to the pros at Gold Coast Financial. They can help you bid your dread of interest rates goodbye. Don't wait another minute. Start living in your dream home while sending your interest rate nightmares packing. Gold Coast Financial. 649-8757. 649-8757. Gold Coast Financial. 831-649-8757.
The FDA has proposed changes to prescription drug labels on antidepressants. The new labels would state that in patients under the age of 24, the medication increases the risk of suicidal thoughts and behavior. United Airlines parent company and Continental Airlines are reportedly discussing a possible merger, which would create the largest airline in the U.S. Also today, AirTran Holdings made a nearly $300 million stock and cash bid for smaller airline Midwest Air Group. A panel of experts in New York City warns that the city could have so many people by the year 2030 that rush hour traffic would last all day. The population increase would also lead to energy and housing shortages. An internet research company reports that in November, for the first time, the online social networking website MySpace.com beat Yahoo in the number of U.S. page views. The internet calling service Skype, which is owned by eBay, will soon begin charging its customers $30 a year for unlimited calls wells in the U.S. and Canada. Previously, the service was free. Former Enron CEO Jeffrey Skilling has now started to serve his 24-year prison sentence in a low-security federal facility in Minnesota. Light sweet crude is trading at $61.48 a barrel, and at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow was up 2 points at 12,317, NASDAQ up 1, S&P 500 up 2. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Ali Dramoff.
Okay, don't you,
South America,
now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we are again, 6 minutes after the hour, Wednesday. I'm Bob Kincaid. Great to have you along. Of course, Wednesdays are special around here. A little more so this evening than others, but you know what Wednesday means.
On this every other Wednesday afternoon discussion club, we are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
You ever wonder if that's actually Arianna Huffington? I'm kidding. It's prayer meeting, of course. But beyond prayer meeting, it's also, I get nervous every time I do this because things have a way of falling apart. But hopefully, just after the top of the 7 o'clock hour Eastern time, the second hour of this program, we hope to be joined by the first announced presidential candidate of the Democratic Party and a man whom I would be proud to call my president, Ohio Congressman Dennis Kucinich. And we'll talk a little bit about what he hopes to do with his campaign and the conversation that he hopes to have with America in the coming months and the years leading up to November of 2008. Not quite 2 years away at this juncture. So I hope you'll get as much out of that as I do. There is, of course, a ton of stuff. You know, every night there's a ton of stuff. I finish every program with a stack of things that we haven't even gotten to that I think, oh boy, this has gotta, and we never get it. But just the same, there is there's stuff tonight that just somehow or another, it says it has to be gotten to. And for that reason, I hope we will have success. The lead story broke about, 3 o'clock Eastern time this afternoon. If you are we do prayer meeting edition with our tongue planted firmly in our cheek because of all the excesses and the wrongs and the hate and the bigotry of the and just the outlandish, outrageous conduct of the religious right. But if you're a praying person, or a meditating person, or a good vibe sending person, or an incense burning person, whatever it is you do to send positive energy and your best hopes and your best wishes, please take time to send them toward South Dakota Democratic Senator Tim Johnson. Senator Johnson was taken to George Washington University Medical Center in Washington, D.C., sometime shortly after the 11 o'clock hour Eastern time today, suffering what are still being described in media reports as stroke-like symptoms. And it's one of those things that just makes me crazy with the medical profession sometimes. stroke-like symptoms. Well, we're not prepared to say it was. But that's science. You only say what you know. And it's frustrating to us, but it is the way that science has to operate. Stroke-like symptoms for Senator Tim Johnson. And, of course, when a person's life is hanging in the balance, it seems, and I say this because I've already heard the reportage on radio news and seen some of it on the television, it seems somehow almost vile to speak in terms, because all, you know, there are probably thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of people in the United States today who have been taken into various and sundry hospitals with things that are described as stroke-like symptoms. And we're not talking about them. It could come to some of our number at some point in time, and we're not talking about them either. Although it will matter to everyone in this little community we have built more than we can imagine. We've lost members of this community, and it hurts. So my thoughts are initially with Senator Johnson, and not even Senator Johnson. My thoughts initially are with Tim's family and with Tim himself. I do not share all of his political views, but that really doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things. Stroke is a horrible, horrible, horrible thing to happen to a human being. And so it's terrifying, isn't it? You know, it's not the fear of death that gets to most of us. It is the fear of what takes us to it. And stroke is just terrifying. I have an aunt who was working, lived in this house. It was 1967. And she was puttering around the house, and she looked at my grandmother and said, "Mother, I have a terrible headache," and 2 minutes later she was dead. Blood clot on the brain is what they said back then. I think now we call it a massive brain aneurysm. Just out of the blue, no symptoms, no nothing. And that's spooky, isn't it? And so our thoughts are with Tim Johnson's family and with Tim Johnson himself and with the practitioners of medical science who are working to make him better, make him whole, make him well. Like I said, it feels almost vile to consider any other ramification of that story. But yet, like I said, on all the news programs, you heard it on the top of the hour news, the concern is the fact that Tim Johnson is a member of that extremely fragile Senate majority that stands between decency in America and a return to some semblance of representative government and control of the United States Senate by the monstrous thugs who brought us Terry Schiavo, Sam Alito, John Roberts, the bankruptcy bill, the attempt to give Anna Nicole Smith and Paris Hilton a tax break. The people who passed things like Vietnam free trade agreements. So, I suppose while I consider it initially vile, it is not entirely untoward that one would at least want to know what the circumstances are. Tim Johnson, as I said, is a senator from the state of South Dakota. He is a Democrat. He is a part of the slimmest of senatorial majorities. This is the ugly side of the Tim Johnson story, the political side, and that is that the way the law is set up in the state of South Dakota, the governor there, a man by the name of Mike Rounds, who is in fact a member of the Republican Party, the law says that if Tim Johnson is unable to complete his term, which ends in 2008, that Mike Rounds gets to appoint his replacement, and that Mike Rounds does not have to honor the wishes of the voters who sent a Democrat to the Senate, that he can, in fact, appoint a Republican and change the balance of power of the entire nation based upon a political whim that arises in South Dakota. That is disturbing. That is profoundly disturbing. Because then it becomes 50-50 or 51-49, because the other joker in this deck is a weaselly little man from Connecticut named Joe Lieberman. Joe will go where the wind blows. And if it becomes apparent that there will be a Republican majority, he will gladly put a shiv in the backs of Americans all and shift his allegiance and shift his loyalty in order to maintain political power and prestige, because he's that kind of sleazy bastard, Joe Lieberman is. So while, like, I'm sorry. I think political considerations in there are somehow vile. That's about the fourth time I've used the word now. But the fact is, if Tim Johnson doesn't get well, and Mike Rounds doesn't honor the wishes of the voters of South Dakota who put Tim Johnson in office, the Senate majority could very well be lost. Let that sink in. Now, I had occasion to be out, had to run an errand up to the store before the program began, and I heard some prattling nabob on radio say, "Well, you know, in the grand scheme of things, this really doesn't change things that much. It's very difficult to maintain majority positions in the Senate as it is, because after all, the Senate is a much more independent body than the House of Representatives. The Democrats learned this a couple of years ago when they had a slim majority in the Senate, and still they were at constant loggerheads with the majority party in the House." You know, eat me. The fact of the matter is, no one asks the House of Representatives what they think about judicial nominees. No one asks the members of the House of Representatives what they think about presidential cabinet appointments. So, if the majority cannot be held, that means that should there be another opening in the Supreme Court, George Bush will get to appoint another far-right activist judge like Sam Alito or John Roberts. Your freedom is in precarious and fragile balance at this juncture. And that's no joke. Because, after all, what's going to happen when the habeas corpus bill goes up on appeal? Right now, there is the slimmest of chances, the very slimmest of chances, that the habeas corpus bill could be struck down as the unconstitutional, monstrous act of political skullduggery that it actually is. Without that Democratic majority, however, one more Supreme Court vacancy guarantees that thugs like Scalia, Alito, Roberts, Thomas will have a pal on the court to make a five-person majority and say, "It's the will of Congress, and we are constitutional originalists, and we must bow to the will of Congress, who said they would like to pass a law that is in complete violation of Article 1, Section 9 of the United States Constitution, and it is the prerogative of the legislative to do such a thing, and the judiciary can only stick its thumb in its mouth and suck." I'm sorry. Having had loved ones in the hospital in grave circumstances, I can only imagine what Tim Johnson's family is going through. And frankly, if I were one of them and I heard this discussion about the political ramifications of his illness, I think I would put a brick through a window. But this is the America that we live in. This is the broken nation we inhabit. This is a nation where one lone vote can be the difference between constitutional freedoms that are presently on life support and constitutional freedoms that are taken out back behind the building and gut slit. There has never been a, never has there been a more critical time in the United in the political history of the United States of America. We have faced greater crises. Hell, the British came and burned down our little White House before it was even fully built. Turned it from the White House into the sort of smoldering charcoal smudged house. Certainly. And we've had other presidents start wars of choice. Mr. Polk, who's, well, Mr. Polk got himself going a nice little war in Mexico. We got New Mexico, Arizona, and California out of it. Maybe even more, not sure. But I know we got the, what was that? The, because we forced the Gadsden Purchase? Was it the Gadsden Purchase? How did it get this way? How did it become so fragile? Well, you know, you have to you have to take a long, hard look at things like signing statements. You have to take a long, hard look at a government that is so scared and lives in such timidity that it reflects its timidity in homicidal manias against other countries that have never raised a finger against us. A level of paranoia that thinks that everyone who doesn't look just as lily white bread white as Dick and George is somehow a threat. Yeah, that was the truth of that was manifested yesterday. A real horror out in Utah. How did it get this way? How did we get here? You know what? We got here on the backs of people like Newt Gingrich who put out a contract on America. We got here on the backs of people like Flush Flembaugh hollering for 25 years that working people were the problem in America. We got here on the blackened wings of Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly. We got here on the with the help of people like Tom Tancredo and Jim DeMint and Tom Coburn and Jim Inhofe and Jeff Sessions and Saxby Chambliss and Lindsey Graham and George Allen. Oh yeah, we got here with a lot of help. We got here with the help of Dan Burton from Indiana shooting watermelons in his backyard to prove that Hillary killed Vince Foster. We got here with the help of Bob Barr screaming about the rule of law because the President of the United States engaged in some consensual foreplay with a woman not his wife. How did we get to this fragile state? We got to this fragile state with the help of an academic woman who likes to play the piano and has a penchant for Russian studies. who saw a presidential daily briefing on August the 6th, 2001, that was titled, for the love of God, it was titled, Bin Laden Determined to Strike Inside U.S., and talked about the fact that Bin Laden and his gang wanted to use planes as missiles and were hatching hijack plots and had their operatives inside the U.S. That's how we got here. We got here because that presidential daily briefing was handed to an incurious little man on vacation in Crawford, Texas, who said, let somebody else think about it. And all the while, a man named Richard Clark was running around Washington begging for someone to please, for the love of God, listen to him, that hell was about to crack wide open. That's how we got here. And so these are the ugly, nasty, vile little political considerations that come into consideration when a decent human being like Tim Johnson has stroke-like symptoms and is hospitalized at George Washington University Medical Center, and his family, grief-stricken, sits and worries and wonders if the man that they love, daddy, husband, uncle, cousin, if he will even survive, and their considerations are not of what will happen to the senator, but what will happen to Tim. But because we live in a bloody, fanged political atmosphere that counts political power among all things, and we have an opposition party that would sell its own mother to a whorehouse to get power, we have to think not about Tim Johnson, but about Senator Johnson. And we have to worry about whether a Republican governor will think more of his party and his party's power. And by God, you can just about bet the phone call has already gone out from Karl Rove's office. Mike, it's Karl. Of course, you're going to appoint a Republican if Tim Johnson kicks the bucket, ain't you? Oh, yes, sir, Carl. I sure will, Carl. Yes, sir. Could I appoint myself, sir, Carl, sir? That might be a little over the top, Mike. Meanwhile, there, you know, if we're going to contemplate these things, and I feel like I should go and take a, just be deloused for this. This is just icky. But there is a valuable and valid and viable and honorable and decent human being who could be appointed to fulfill the remainder of Tim Johnson's term. His name? You know his name. Not Tim, but Tom. Not Johnson, but Daschle. Apparently, you would think that a Democrat would have to be replaced with a Democrat and a Republican with a Republican, but that doesn't apparently obtain in South Dakota state law. And state law determines how the replacement would be selected. And I feel like I should probably be tire-ironed for talking about this, because we're talking about things that will happen only upon the completion of absolute familial horrors for Mr. Johnson's family, and my heart goes out. It absolutely goes out to them. But please understand, these are dangerous times. These are incredibly dangerous times. If we do not maintain the Senate majority, the Republic will be at more risk than it has been literally since the British were trying to burn Washington City to the ground. You think? I think. So we're going to take a break and come back and look at a few other stories. Ugh. And there's plenty of them. I want to share something with you before we go, though. And where we worry about one man perhaps passing, another man passed today of a different sort altogether. We lost one of our great We lost one of our great comic actors today. Peter Boyle passed away at the age of 71. And those who bring us joy deserve our memorials, our mementos mori. And so, you know who Peter Boyle was. He played the father on Everybody Loves Raymond, but everyone else, and it's the beauty of great comedy and a great performance that we are able to have things visualized for us immediately just by hearing something. And so it's as the creature in Young Frankenstein that we remember Peter Boyle.
May I now present a cultured, sophisticated man about town. Hit it!
If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where fashion sits?
You're already laughing.
Different types who wear a day coat, pants with stripes, or cutaway coat, perfect fit. Dressed up like a $1 million trooper, trying mighty hard to look like Gary Cooper. Let's mix where Rockefellers walk with sticks or Umbrellas in their mix.
God, I love the visual. I'm going to have to go out and rent Young Frankenstein just as a way of honoring the memory of Peter Boyle. And, of course, beyond Young Frankenstein, he had a lot of other film credits. One of which, a particular favorite, and it fits it. We'll never be able to play this again without thinking of Peter Boyle in a different way. But a wonderful, wonderful comic film called Dream Team, in which he played he was an ad executive who had gone completely around the bend and thought himself to be Jesus.
And he said, it's time for you to leave behind the things of this world, the fine houses, the fancy cars, the flashy clothes, because we are all naked in the eyes of the Lord.
Stop! This man is clinically insane!
Yep. So, in the midst of all our other worries, let us take a moment to remember the family of Peter Boyle, who gave us so much laughter and so much happiness. Now, we'll take a break. And when we come back, I don't know. How about a little bit of public embarrassment? You up for that? Oh, God. And again, coming up in about a half an hour, a reason for hope. Ohio Congressman Dennis Kucinich will join us. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
All right. The Head On Radio Network is brought to you every night by the Carpenters and Millwrights. The Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters is a portion of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners of America, or more commonly called the Carpenters Union. The millwrights are a very specialized craft that perform their work with highly sensitive equipment and perform much of their work on machinery like turbines, laser alignment, and other highly specialized tools. We would like to thank the Carpenters and Millwrights for their support, because freedom of speech is free, and it's brought to you by the Carpenters and Millwrights, working hard every day to provide a brighter future. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters, all you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
Here's a test for you. Listen and identify the following water-saving devices in your home. Ready? That's the sound of water-saving device number 54, your toothbrush. Turning the water off while you brush your teeth saves more than 1,000 gallons a year. Next, that's your clock. Water-saving device number 23. Use it to reduce your shower by 5 minutes and save nearly 9,000 gallons a year. Try this one. Right, it's water-saving device number 83, your washing machine. Washing full loads of laundry or dishes can save thousands of gallons of water each year. Last clue. That's you, logging on to WaterUseItWisely.com, a fun website filled with hundreds of water-saving tips from your local water utility and the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water. Use it wisely.
Oh, wild horses couldn't drag me away. Wild,
it's going to take some doing to get through the list tonight, the stack. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. It's prayer meeting, so let's go straight to the church. In point of fact, let's go to a church in Greenwich, Connecticut. Let's go to the church in Greenwich, Connecticut, whose former music director has recently pleaded not guilty to possessing child pornography. He's 64 years old, this former music director of the church in Greenwich, Connecticut. First day with the rented lips, sorry. His name is Robert F. Tate. Longtime music director of Christ Church in Greenwich. It was the home church of former President George Bush. That would be Pappy, H.W., bailout Bush. It's where he went to church and learned nothing about the message of Christ Jesus while he was growing up. Pappy Bush's mother and father were both had their funerals there. Robert F. Tate, 64 years old, according to law enforcement officials and court records, possessed digital images of a minor engaging in sexually explicit conduct. That's images, plural. I put the question in the first half hour, how did we get here? Well, part of it has to do with putting into power and allowing power to descend upon a family that has the moral compass of a rock. Not Iraq, a rock. Robert F. Tate. Robert F. Tate. They had a bond hearing for Robert F. Tate. And Elizabeth Bush, who is the wife of Prescott Bush, who is Poppy's brother, offered these comments about a man who, as I noted, was caught in possession of digital images of children in various states of sexually explicit acts. Oh, by the way, also referred to in court records as having apparently engaged in foreign travel for the purpose of photographing children. The president's auntie told the court of this person who likes to photograph little children doing the nasty. She said to the court, "I think he's wonderful. He certainly has been a wonderful, wonderful choir director for 36 years. He's just the most extraordinarily talented and spiritual person." See, and you thought it was all that old beast Barbara with the beautiful mind, and actually Katrina's working out well for the people living on cots in the Astrodome and all that stuff. Sunshine, it's not just her. It is pathological inside the entire family. Dig it. Dude is charged, 64 years old. And he is charged with having engaged in foreign travel to go and photograph children having sex. And what does the president's auntie say? "I think he's wonderful. He's just the most extraordinarily talented and spiritual person." Spiritual? I've gotten a lot of email lately begging me not to scream. Not to raise my voice. Spiritual? Robert Yates? Was he spiritual? No, no, no. The other way. No, turn around. Click, click, flash, flash, click, 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 click. Bzz, 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 bzz. Motor drive. Spiritual? Is it spiritual? No. Okay. You're probably already at TMI by a long shot. Just way too much information. But this is an information program, and you sit back, and from time to time you ask yourself how we got here. We got here on the backs of people who think that child sex aficionados are spiritual. That is how we got here. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And we got here with the Ted Haggards of the world. And we got here, oh look, it's Colorado again. We got here with the help of the Reverend Paul Barnes of Grace Chapel in Douglas County, Colorado. Pastor and shepherd to a flock of 2,100 people. Reverend Barnes broke down in tears in a videotaped message this past Sunday to his congregation there at Grace Chapel. 54 years old, and he says that he's quitting. Not gonna be pastor and shepherd to that flock of 2100 anymore because he can't stop having sex with other men. What a sad and benighted place this nation is right now. You know, I may not disagree, or I may not agree with the evangelical message, and I may not buy into gossipy water moccasins and or Adam and Eve riding to Sunday school on the back of a dinosaur. I may not buy into all of that, but I first and foremost, by God, do believe in the First Amendment. And these people have a right to worship as they see fit, what they see fit. I have a concomitant right to offer up commentary and criticism on those worship proclivities. But you tell me. Pastor Barnes had to resign his position because he engaged in the love that dare not speak its name. Let that settle in for a minute. Because I don't care how people love each other so long as they love each other. This is, after all, prayer meeting, isn't it? He had to step down from the pulpit. Robert F. Yates, 64, former choir director of Christ Church in Greenwich, Connecticut, had to be dragged out of the church after he got caught traveling to foreign countries to photograph children having sex. You tell me here, brother, sister, you tell me who the sinner is. Reverend Barnes, Pastor Barnes, says that, quote, "I have struggled with homosexuality since I was a 5-year-old boy. I can't tell you the number of nights I have cried myself to sleep begging God to take this away. Begging God to take this away." Perhaps instead, he might have spent a little more time begging God to give him the vision and the compassion and the Christ-like loving nature to understand that when Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian carpenter, said, "Love each other as I have loved you," he did not put any preconditions on it. And never said a blessed word in all that is recorded and accepted as holy and true by the vast majority of Christianity, or what passes for it, as his actual words. Not one. Never. He did have some commentary about being rotten and mean and filthy to children. And he talked a lot about what comes to the people who treat the poor like crap. But not a word did he say about the sins that Pastor Barnes perceives that he has engaged in. Barnes describes himself as an introvert. He avoids politics, preferring to talk about a Generation X service at the non-denominational church that he started in his basement 28 years ago. He and his church stayed completely out of the Colorado debate regarding the ballot measure that would have defined marriage as a union between one man and one woman. His associate pastor said, "I can't think of a single sermon where he ever had a political agenda." In their only talk about sex, Barnes said his father took him on a drive and talked about what he would do if a fag approached him. Barnes said he thought, "Is that how you'd feel about me?" It was like a knife in my heart, and it made me feel even more closed. Where does the bigotry end? Where does the prejudice end? Those 2,100 people who showed up in the pews every Sunday, Sunday in and Sunday out, admired and looked to Pastor Barnes for spiritual guidance on right and wrong and how to get through an increasingly complicated minefield of daily living. And his advice and his counsel and his guidance was valid to them. Even though the man is gay. Now his advice and counsel is no longer valid because they know he's gay. You know, a few years ago when I started this program, I would have covered a story like this, cackling and giggling all along the way. There's nothing to laugh about, and there's nothing to cackle about, and there's nothing to giggle about. The hypocrisy of a Ted Haggard, you know, what did we call him, the Crystal Methodist? It's hard not to take a little bit of guilty delight when someone who holds himself up as the pole star of morality brings himself down by his own hand. Did I say hand? I don't think it was his hand. See, I'm still doing it. But this guy wasn't politicking from the pulpit. Everything that I'm reading here suggests to me that he was trying to live a Christ-like life, whatever that is. The couple has two daughters who are in their 20s, and his wife said that she had no idea about his struggles until he told her last week. Church elder Russ Pilcher said he was concerned about the couple, and he said, "I thought, where did I fall short in making myself so unapproachable that he couldn't come to me?" Well, you know, maybe it's got a little something to do with evangelicism and fundamentalism's the constant harping on Leviticus 19:26, thou shalt not wear polyester mixed with cotton nor wool, neither shalt thou lay down with a man of the same sex, or be thou stoned unto a bloody pulp. Maybe that's what makes it unapproachable. You think? Given the Haggard story, the news account says, Palmer was asked whether Barnes' fall from grace would expose the evangelical community to further charges of hypocrisy. Quote, "The criticism is valid if you look at perfection being the mark, because the next person who stands at our pulpit is going to be guilty of not being perfect as well," he said. "Does that mean we have to change what we say about the Word of God? We can't do that. Maybe we could study the Word of God a little bit and find out that all those passages from Leviticus were written for the Levites, who were the priestly class of the ancient Hebrews, who were barely literate. And this is not me saying this. Lewis Black, great comedian, describing the Hebrews, his own people of that period, said they were 10 hairs away from being baboons. Now, that's not anti-Semitism, it's not anti-anything. That's just Lewis Black, he's a funny guy. But yeah, semi-literate, rarely bathing, civilization being a very... The difference between civilized and uncivilized being the tissue damn thin. Maybe we could start looking at that Holy Scripture in the light of civilized people. But they won't. You heard it from Elder Parker, or whatever his name is. Palmer. Elder Palmer. Nope. they're going to go on tormenting people. Torment thou them just as thou wert also tormented. Mother McCree. Oh, we've got a Jim Dandy prayer meeting going tonight, don't we? You had the story that John Fox talked about on his program last night. Maybe Pastor Barnes ate too much tofu growing up. Too much soy. I didn't touch the story last night because John did such a wonderful job with it. But, I've still got it sitting here in front of me, and it is mind-numbing. Mega, this is another Fundy preacher. And I say this with no glee, we'll find out that he likes to chase little boys or watch them do things to each other. And I like, straight out of the Peter Sellers line from Being There, I like to watch. We'll find out something about Jim Rutz, who is head of, where is it? Come on, help me here. Oh, yeah, chairman of Mega Shift Ministries. And this is the guy who, there's a slow poison out there that's severely damaging our children and threatening to tear apart our culture. The ironic part is, it's a health food, one of our most popular. Now, I'm a health food guy, a fanatic who seldom allows anything into his kitchen unless it's organic. I state my bias here just so you'll know I'm not anti-health food. Now, I'm anti-health food. I can't get enough of trans fats. I'm really worried what's going to happen in New York when they can't. I'm going to be on the corner hustling for trans fats. The dangerous food I'm speaking of is soy. Soybean products are feminizing, and they're all over the place. You can hardly escape them anymore. I have nothing against an occasional soy snack. Some of my best snacks are soy. It's nutritious and contains lots of good things. Unfortunately, when you eat or drink a lot of soy stuff, you're also getting substantial quantities of estrogens. Dumbass, they're phytoestrogens. This is just rich stuff. How did we get here? Was that the question I started out with somewhere around a quarter past the hour? How did we get here? We got here with the help of Jim Rutz. P.S., this is the end of the article. Great googly moogly. P.S., soy sauce is fine. Unlike soy milk, it's perfectly safe because it's fermented. Well, good. Thank God it's... So fermentation makes it... Because it's fermented, which changes its molecular structure. Miso, natto, and tempeh are also okay, but avoid tofu. No more tofu. It's wiping out the clergy, the tofu. I hope this interview comes to pass because I need some common sense. I'm looking forward to talking with Congressman Kucinich because this man wants to bring America together. This is the only Democratic presidential. This is the only potential presidential candidate. The only presidential candidate who is actually in line with 72% of America. Whether it's Hillary or Obama or Biden or Rudy or McCain or Mitt Romney, whatever, they all think this war is just groovy. Only Dennis Kucinich has staked out the majority position, and I look forward to speaking with him in the coming hour. I'm going to take a breath. I may take a shot. I'm kidding. Sherman, set the Wayback Machine. I don't know where we got to go to fix this crap, but I want to go to do the time travel and just make it all... I don't know. Soy. Ministers. Music directors. Greenwich, Connecticut. not just collecting dirty pictures. Friends of the Bush family, not just collecting dirty pictures of children doing it, but traveling overseas to photograph it himself. I didn't like the angles on the last ones. And Mrs. Bush kind of, he's just wonderful. Oh, Jeebus!
This is the Quality News Network. President Bush continues to meet with military officials on his Iraq policy. Today he announced he would not be rushed into changes in strategy. Yesterday, President Bush heard from top generals in Iraq via video teleconference. They suggested that the U.S. cannot follow the Iraq Study Group's recommendation of withdrawing a large number of U.S. troops by 2008. They said Iraqi forces will not be ready by then. President Bush says he's considering increasing troops in Baghdad and the Anbar province. 8 out of 10 Americans favor a change in war policy in Iraq from a combat role to one of training. That's according to the most recent Washington Post ABC News poll. The Iraq war has now gone on longer than U.S. involvement in World War II. In and around Baghdad, at least 23 people were killed in attacks today. A car bomb blast during the morning rush hour killed 11 and wounded 27. The tortured and bullet-ridden bodies of another 21 people were found dumped throughout the city. In Washington, a federal judge today upheld a president's new terrorism law. It was the first legal challenge to the law denying Guantanamo Bay prisoners access to U.S. courts. The first female Marine officer was killed in Iraq recently by a roadside bomb. Major Megan McClung, a public affairs officer, was escorting reporters in a convoy near Ramadi when she was killed. In the Gaza Strip today, a Hamas commander who served as a judge was killed by Palestinian gunmen. He was shot outside of the courthouse. At the UN, the General Assembly adopted a treaty to champion the rights of the disabled, a population estimated at 650 million worldwide. The agreement set a record for negotiation and consensus in the world body. In Michigan, prison officials announced today assisted suicide advocate Jack Kevorkian will be released in June. The 78-year-old doctor was serving a 10- to 25-year sentence for helping a Detroit man with a fatal disease kill himself. In Tanzania, a Roman Catholic priest was sentenced to 15 years in prison by the UN-led War Crimes Court trying those accused of genocide in Rwanda. Father Sarumba ordered the destruction of his own church and the brutal slaying of all 2,000 Tutsis seeking sanctuary inside. Actor Peter Boyle has died in New York City. He was suffering from heart disease and skin cancer. He was 71. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Hugh Hauser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're here to talk with people about their business banking. Here's a guy who not only banks at the bank, he helped build the bank building.
Yes, sir.
Do you find the fact that it's a local bank appealing?
Yes, that's just it. It was the local people in the community that originally started the bank, and that's why I got involved.
It's a local bank with big bank benefits. It's part of a network of banks. Does
yes.
that mean anything to you?
Absolutely. Having a bank that can handle a big project really helps because some banks aren't tailored to handle big business, and they can handle the big business for sure. They have no limitations to what they can do for your business.
I do my business banking and my personal banking with them.
Both.
Absolutely.
You're double dipping.
You bet.
Above and beyond banking from the network of preferred community banks. Available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
The crew aboard the space shuttle Discovery has conducted the first spacewalk of their trip. Today they will prepare for one of the most significant tasks of their 12-day mission, rewiring the International Space Station. The FDA has proposed changes to prescription drug labels on antidepressants. The new labels would state that in patients under the age of 24, the medication increases the risk of suicidal thoughts and behavior. United Airlines' parent company and Continental Airlines are reportedly discussing a merger that would create the largest airline in the U.S. Australia's Qantas Airlines rejected an $8.6 billion takeover bid today by three investment groups. The airline said the terms were unacceptable. Today, the president of OPEC suggested the oil cartel may maintain production rather than make cuts. Other members favor a cut because new data indicates a drop in worldwide inventories. In October, OPEC reduced output by 1.2 million barrels a day. Light sweet crude is trading at $62.17 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones was up 2 points at 12,317. The NASDAQ up 1 at 2432. The S&P 500 up 2 at 1413. And gold ended trading on NYMEX at $632.70 an ounce. You can find more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund. It's 5 minutes past the hour.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Five and a half minutes past the hour. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. Wednesday night prayer meeting edition. And on the phone with us right now, a particular and signal honor for me, we are joined by presidential candidate and Ohio Congressman Dennis Kucinich. Congressman Kucinich, welcome to the program. Thank you for taking time to join us. Button. I think my producer was so excited, Congressman, that she forgot to turn you up there. Can you hear me now?
Yes, and I can hear you loud and clear, and I'm hopeful the American people are going to hear my voice loud and clear in this campaign, because I want to bring our troops home and give America a new direction in the world.
Well, Congressman, I think it's that's the single most important message that this nation needs to hear. And one of the things I pointed out is it cannot be said in this presidential cycle that the anti-war, the end of the war message is somehow out of the mainstream. You, having joined this presidential campaign, Congressman, are actually, as far as I'm concerned, you're the majority candidate right now, because 72% of America agrees with you.
Well, I believe that. I know I'm the majority candidate, because the majority of people in this country voted to give the Democrats power, expect us to take the troops out of Iraq, and it was quite shocking to a lot of Americans to learn that the leaders of the Democratic Party are now saying they're going to their intention is to fund the war and a supplemental appropriation of $160 billion in the spring to keep the war going to the end of Bush's term. Now, what that means is that we're ignoring the fact that there's money in the pipeline right now, Bob. Congress appropriated $70 billion October 1st, just 2 months ago. That money can be used to bring the troops home. The American people want the troops home. The American people want an end to this war. Well, let's show that it can be done, and that's why I'm running, to give the people a voice and a choice.
Well, Congressman, what do you say to those people who say, well, you know, it's just unrealistic, we can't just pull out now?
Actually, we have to. It is realistic. The war, it cannot be won militarily. It's already been stated by the Iraq Study Group and by a number of generals. We're in a moment right now where the war is the violence in the war is cycling upward. If you read the daily headlines, and, you know, we would spend the entire interview period here reciting the cities where there have been massive casualties in Iraq, and our presence there is a destabilizing factor. Our presence has fueled the insurgency. Our presence has created for Al-Qaeda an opening in Iraq. Our presence needs to end. We need to end the occupation, bring the troops home, secure Iraq by working with countries around the region who ordinarily we wouldn't want to work with. But we have to change that thinking, too. We have to reach out to Syria and Iran. We need a solution that provides stability for Iraq, but we cannot do it as occupiers.
The American people, it's taken them a while to get around to this notion that we've got to get out, but we're there now, Congressman. Why do you think, after what we saw, this profound sea change in the congressional makeup of November 7th. What's happened all of a sudden? What happened to that momentum to end this?
Well, I think you're looking at the dynamic which is going to also affect 2008. The people decided they wanted a change, so they swept the Democrats into power in November. The Democrats get the power, and all of a sudden our leaders say, whoa, wait a minute, we're going to keep funding the war. They use the euphemism of we have to support the troops in the field. Fact of the matter is that the longer we fund the war, the longer the troops are there. I mean, what our leaders are talking about is not voting to support the troops in the field. They're voting to keep the troops in the field. And so my position is to say, look at the mandate the people gave us. Let's be encouraged by the power of the American people expressing their government to go in a new direction. Let's take that power and express the will of the people and claim the co-equality of the Congress and let the president know there's a new direction coming and tell the president we have the money to bring the troops home now and tell the president we're not going to give him any more money to keep the war going and keep the troops there. That's what we ought to be doing. That's why I'm running. That's why I want to let the American people know, look, we can go in a new direction now. We don't have to be stuck. And, you know, we're in a rut in Iraq, and the only difference between a rut and a grave is in the dimensions.
Isn't that the absolute truth? What kind of costs, if you know, what kind of costs are associated with bringing them home?
Well, you know, we already have ships that are in the area to bring them home. We have planes to bring them home. What is it if we put the troops on a first class on planes and give them a first class air ticket? It would not be that expensive. You have 140,000 troops. I mean, let's say at most it would cost $1 billion to bring them home. You leave the equipment there for the Iraqi army. The point is that that's not an impediment. We have the money to bring them home. Nobody is arguing. The money is not there to bring them home. What isn't there at this point to bring them home? Our party leaders don't have the will to bring the troops home, yet the American people have the will to bring the troops home. So I say if the people have the will to bring the troops home, then the Congress ought to have that will. And if the Congress doesn't have that will and other presidential candidates don't have that will, the people need to know that there's one person who's been consistent. You know, people are looking for leadership. Leadership has to show foresight. I saw it was wrong to go in. It is wrong to stay in. We need to get out now, and I've showed the way to do it. I have a plan that makes it possible to restore the Iraqi people over a period of time, but we can't do it as occupiers. So now's the time to act. And anyone who wants more information, can just go to my website at Kucinich.us and read my analysis of the only way to get out of Iraq and can read the votes that so many members of Congress, including a number of people who are talking about running for president, gave to fund the war. Final comment here, you cannot vote to fund the war and say you're opposed to the war.
Well, that seems to be common sense to me. Now that the people have spoken, Congressman, I suppose one could accuse me of being a little bit mean or perhaps cynical. It seems that now that the public opinion is so thoroughly swung toward the idea of finally recognizing how profoundly wrong this war is and was. I mean, the polling data now says that the people say that Americans recognize it was wrong to do it in the first place. It would seem to me that we have to, and perhaps not you, more like me, we have to have a debate about how much blood we are willing to have on our hands now that we realize it is a wrong thing.
Well, you're right about that. John Kerry raised the question when he was a young person opposing the war in Vietnam. He says, you know, how are you going to tell someone that a family, they're going to be the last, their loved one's going to be the last person to die in a war that was wrong? I mean, I'm paraphrasing it, but the fact remains that we were wrong to go in. Now, the one thing that you probably know, Bob, is that I organized the effort against the war in the House of Representatives in 2002. I organized 125 Democrats to vote against the war. When I stepped forward and I said, look, there's no proof that Iraq had anything to do with 9/11, you know, some people were saying, well, you're not a good American. I said, wait a minute. You know, where's the proof? There's no proof Iraq has weapons of mass destruction. I gave a speech called Prayer for America. It's on my website at Kucinich.us. I gave it in California in 2002, and I predicted everything that would happen unless the government came to its senses. I was right then, I'm right now. people want someone who has foresight. You know, the prophet Isaiah said, without vision, a people perish. And I was able to see through the lies. And I think people want leadership like that. People want leadership which has the courage to challenge prevailing consensus and to shake the sensibilities of the Congress and say, look, we're going the wrong direction. The people gave us the power to bring these troops home now. Let's do it.
Well, obviously, you have an ability through your candidacy to speak to the American people. What about your day-to-day work inside the Congress in terms of committee work or speaking with your colleagues? What about a member of the House such as Jack Murtha, who started out very much a hawk and now realizes it has to end? Can there be reaching across the ideological, if not political, aisle?
Of course there can be, and we need to do that, and I intend to do that. I met with Jack Murtha last week to talk to him about the necessity of voting of bringing our troops home now, the money being there right now. Jack Murtha performed a public service by having thoroughly supported the war, recognized the wrongness of it, took that position. He was one of the ones responsible for the change in the Congress. What thanks did he get? He ran for majority leader and he was defeated by a wide margin. Jack Murtha had the willingness to take a stand. The next step is to tell the president, look, we're not going to keep funding the war. You know, this $70 billion that's already been funded, mm-hmm. They can bring the troops home. The money's there right now. Add to that the $160 billion, which many of the leaders have already said they will give the president in the spring. That's $230 billion.
Almost a quarter of a trillion.
Almost a quarter of a trillion dollars. And that's twice the amount that was appropriated for the war in the year 2006, which when the war was escalated. The $160 billion is three times the amount of our federal education budget. Think about our priorities. Think about the needs of the people across this country for job creation, for health care, for housing, for education. And we're throwing all of the resources of our country into this war. What is going on in America? Why don't we take the mandate the people gave us and bring our troops home and start to chart a new direction? This is a serious moment in American history. I'm running for president because I believe the people need to know that someone's willing to stand up and speak out, that somebody had the foresight from the beginning to say it was wrong to go in, it's wrong to stay in, that somebody's willing to challenge his own party and say, look, we have the power now. Let's bring the troops home. And so I'm working on rallying the American people. And anyone who wants to join me, I invite you to go to my website at Kucinich.us and read the article about, you know, the way to get out of Iraq and sign up for newsletters so you can see what I'm continuing to do. I'm going to be traveling across this country to give people an opportunity to hear the truth, and I think the American people will respond again, just as they responded in November. The support is there. As you said at the beginning of the program, Bob, the American people already spoke on this, and I feel I'm representing the mainstream of this country with the position I'm taking.
Well, Congressman, obviously presidential campaigns do not come cheap. Do you also have fundraising information at the website?
We're going to be raising money on the Internet. Last campaign, I raised about $13 million, much of it on the Internet. And this is a populist campaign. People have a chance to support someone who's not owned by defense contractors. I mean, Dwight David Eisenhower said, you know, more than 50 years ago, when he was on his way out as President of the United States, he said, you know, beware of the military-industrial complex. And he understood that a war can after a while, be its own justification. People making billions of dollars. Well, there's so much suffering going on both sides. So this is another dimension here. And people can go to my website, and if they can help financially, it'll help accelerate our message, and it'll help us grow this campaign and unite the American people and change the outcome and put our country in a new direction.
Well, you showed profound vision in 2004, and it seems that vision has certainly stayed with you. Part of that vision was the opposition to the war, but Congressman, another part of that was your early advocacy of health care reform in this country and education reform. We've talked a number of times on this program about the $9 billion in cash that just sort of fell into the sofa at the Coalition Provisional Authority, and Paul Bremer said, I have no idea what happened to it. When we talk about numbers like $9 billion and expanding on that vision that you have, what would $9 billion do, for instance, for the Medicaid Part D donut hole? Or what would $9 billion do toward making sure that people who work three jobs a day and or the husband and wife work four jobs together just to keep food on the table and a roof over the family? What would $9 billion, never mind the quarter of a quarter of a trillion, what would $9 billion do for the things that Americans really need done?
Every appropriation of that magnitude has the chance to change the life of millions of people. We do have serious educational needs. I mean, I have advocated universal daycare, where children ages 3, 4, and 5 would be able to enjoy year-round educational opportunities and an early start in life, while their parents, who are often paying as much for daycare as they pay for a child to go to college, would have the opportunity to support the family and not worry about whether their children are cared for, and make sure their children are getting an opportunity for an early start.
And that puts people to work, too, in those daycare
Absolutely.
Centers.
I mean, I've advocated a universal, single-payer, not-for-profit health care system. Myself and John Conyers sponsored a bill in the last Congress that's supported by over 70 members of Congress, and the idea is to turn health care from a for-profit industry to a non-profit service to the people. There are over 100 million Americans who are either uninsured or underinsured. And you know, right now America spends about more than $2 trillion a year on health care, but one out of every $4 goes for the activities of the for-profit system, for corporate profits, for executive salaries, for advertising, marketing.
Bonuses.
And when you take that money and put it instead into health care, you suddenly have enough money for all health care services for all the people, for daily medical care, for vision care, for prescription drugs, for all of the kinds of health care needs, even long-term care that the American people have. I mean, think about it. This is what we ought to be talking about in America. We should be talking about how we can meet the needs of our people and domestically, and instead what we're doing is we're pouring the blood and treasure of this nation into Iraq in a war that not only cannot be won militarily, but never should have been fought in the first place.
It boggles my mind, and the health care debate is very significant to me, Congressman, because this is a startup business we're running here. We're very proud to be the absolute liberal voice, radio voice of America, and you know, we're producing in excess of 12 hours of liberal conversation per day. We think it's a dialogue that America is hungry for. But I'll tell you the honest truth. If I get sick, I'm done. I have no health care. And you know what? I don't feel like it's necessarily a matter of I deserve it, but I and many other Americans out there are trying to do something to help America. We're trying to contribute to the economy. We're trying to keep America going. And an America that says it's more important to kill what is it now? Three quarters of a million Iraqi civilians dead as a result of this war. That's more important than seeing to people who go to work every day and can't go to the doctor when they're sick. There is some we're approaching things, Congressman, that go beyond fiscal concerns and policy concerns and philosophical concerns. This is a realm that moves into the profoundly moral, is it not?
Well, it is a question of morality. I mean, what kind of morality is it to destroy the health of the Iraqi people when we're not using the resources to build the health of our own? What kind of morality is it to blow up bridges in Iraq when we're not developing programs to build bridges in our own country? This is a totally destructive condition that we're in. And with respect to health care, you know, I've gone around the country and talked to people about health care. I have a presentation on my website about the importance of a national health care plan. And I will tell you that we are at a moment where we have the resources. We're already paying for universal standard of care. We're just not getting it because of the for-profit nature of health care. You look at how the profits of the pharmaceutical companies, you look at the profits of the insurance companies. Health care for profit should not be permitted in a society which has a shred of morality. And so I know that even in the district where, in my district, where there are many middle class homeowners and some upper middle class, that a single illness in a family can wipe out a family financially, even if people have health insurance, because there are limits to all insurance. And the rate of bankruptcies in America have climbed significantly. Over half of the bankruptcies are attributable to health care bills. And when you consider how serious this is, you realize that we have a major economic crisis in this country because of the cost of health care and because it's a for-profit system. We're the only industrialized democracy that doesn't cover the health care of our people. So here again, I have a plan for that. And it's important. This is another reason why we have to get out of Iraq. We have to start changing the discussion and start working constructively and start working for peace and building the beloved community again, and proving to ourselves that government of the people, by the people, and for the people, as Lincoln said, shall not perish.
Well, you know, it occurs to me, Congressman, that in all that you have discussed here with me, everything is a war issue, isn't it? It all relates to the war. We have been terrorized and fear-mongered into being afraid of every strange or slightly darker face that we might see in America. But the fact of the matter is, if we get our house in order in the way that you describe it, Congressman, the likelihood of people with religious agendas or fanatical agendas or whatever you want to call it in some far-flung corner of the globe 10,000 miles away, the likelihood of them wanting to kill us if we have our house in order is it decreases significantly, does it not?
There's no question about it. We're creating more animosity towards the United States by having attacked a nation which did not attack us. We, according to the Lancet study, have been responsible for over 600,000 excess deaths in Iraq, 90% of them due to the war, and at least 20% of them due directly to the actions of coalition forces. I mean, we are making enemies all over the world, but we have to change that. We have to change our thinking about this. We cannot dominate the world. We should not try. We cannot go around the world in search of dragons to slay.
Well, it's that kind of arrogance that breeds the hate, isn't it?
Well, it does, and so, you know, I think that this is a moment when we need to consider the imperative of human unity, that all of us around the world are interconnected and we are interdependent. That what affects any one of us affects all of us. This imperative for human unity is actually a statement from which derives from the essence of what it means to be a United States. The unity of the United States was not simply about a unity of 50 geographical territories. It's about human unity. It's about the unity of all people. And so this is the time in the history of the world when the United States needs to live its truth, needs to live its dream, needs to live its purpose. And war does not do that for us. We have a right to defend itself, but our leaders don't know the difference between offense and defense. And we attacked a nation which did not attack us. We have to stop using war as an instrument of policy. We have to put away our nuclear weapons. We have to beat our swords into plowshares, our spears into pruning hooks, and create a vision of a nation which sustains people, which enables people to grow, which gives people hope and gives people a chance to lead a decent life.
Well, you know, we pride ourselves on our progressive spirit and our liberalism. What you just said, though, Congressman, I can't imagine that, although we have been divided by a lot of hate mongers, I can't imagine that message wouldn't reach out. That's, in a way, Congressman, that's a conservative message as well, isn't it?
Well, to me, the underlying truth of America is that out of many, we are one. That was our first motto. E pluribus unum. And when I out of many, one. When I'm in Congress looking at the huge glass presentation that hangs over the Capitol, hangs over the House of Representatives, it is a eagle etched into the ceiling of the House. And that eagle spreads its wings widely, and that eagle has a left wing and a right wing. And it needs two wings to fly. And we need to make sure the left wing is repaired and that it can help the eagle soar in a way that it hasn't. And so my role is to help repair this the nation's dream and to enable our nation to take flight again.
Well, Congressman, you have my support. You have the support of this network. You have the support of thousands of people who are hearing this program right now. We have a banner up at the top of our website.
What is your website address?
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. And then we'll link to you.
Oh, well, thank you very kindly.
And could you send us a copy of this?
I'll be happy to. I'll get in touch with with Andy tomorrow, and I'll get an email address, and I will make sure that a copy of this recording goes to him post-haste.
Oh, that would be great. Well, you could send it to DeKucinich at AOL.
Oh, okay. Okay, wonderful. I'll do that, too.
Okay, thank you very much.
Congressman Kucinich, I can't tell you, you speak to my hopes for the America that I was taught growing up existed, and the America that was worth not only fighting and dying for, but an America that was worth living and hoping and praying for. And we'll be there with you all along the way.
Thanks, and let's talk again soon.
I hope so.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye.
Take
now.
Care. I can't tell you how that inspires me. This is profound stuff. Did you hear anything in that conversation that sounds like the wishy-washy, namby-pamby, the focus-grouped, politicked-up stuff that comes our way every 4 years? Or did it sound to you like real American hope? Did it sound to you like a way out of the morass and the mire and the hate and the death and the destruction? Is this worth working for to you? You're not going to get this, you see. You're not going to get this from triangulators and mainstreamers and members of the DLC. You're only going to get this from somebody who is more in tune and more committed to realities and truths than they are to the advancement of their own personal and political well-being. There were articles in the last day or so in the New York Times and in The Washington Post, and there's a reference to it at Huffington Post. There's a blog post about it, something about the Snide Journalism Awards. Read the New York Times article. You want snide, you want smarmy, you want elitist. This isn't politics. This is actual, honest-to-God patriotism, what you heard from Congressman Dennis Kucinich. Click the banner at the top of the network rep website. It'll take you right to Congressman Kucinich's site. Do what you can. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
I'm weak, so won't back your war. You say I'm on the enemy's side, so not on yours. You say you'll fight for freedom and the right to choose. But then you try to silence my voice. Well, got another thing coming to you, 'cause I am a patriot. I am a patriot. I am a patriot. I am a patriot. It don't make us safe when you're on the attack. If you put your fist in someone's face, he'll knock you in the back.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, on the Head On Radio Network.
I never thought my daughter and I would ever think the same thing is cool.
At home, my boys are like a wrecking ball. But when they volunteer, they're actually shaping things up.
Hey, they planted trees at the local park. Clean the place up.
She makes new friends. She has a great time.
My son loves that he's contributing.
These are nice kids.
The Are You Into It volunteer program is a great way for you and your kids to make a difference in the community while making friends. So, if you're into it, or you think your kid might be, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH. Or visit our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
You can't get him to clean his room, but he loves volunteering.
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
Roughly 24 minutes before the hour, I'm Bob Kincaid, this is Head On. I'm energized, I'm inspired, how about you? If you were moved, if you were inspired, if you are energized, pick up the phone, 877-443-2366 is the phone number. Can you share that? Can you share the kind of vision for America that Congressman Kucinich put forward? Can you... Is that... How do you put something like this? This is a chance to get at to help create and help bring America back to an America that should be and must be. What was the phrase he used? Blessed community. Yeah, he quoted from Isaiah. There's another line, and it's a popular one with the evangelicals, but I think it has meaning that they don't fully understand. If my people, which are called by my name, will humble themselves, I will forgive their sin and heal their land. You see, I don't go in for a lot of mainstream orthodoxy or anything, but you know what? I can take a little common sense where I find it. The fundies like to say, well, that means repressing the homosexuals. That's what it means about repent themselves and humble themselves. No, no. No, no. We've got plenty of sin to deal with, if you'd like to talk in terms of sin. We've got plenty of sin to deal with, and almost the vast majority of it since March of 2003 has had everything in the world to do with the war. And it is about the national healing we must have. And if you go out and, you know, it's not too early to start talking about Congressman Kucinich and about him being president of the United States. It's not too early at all. And when they say, he's a liberal. No, because liberal and conservative alike, 72% of America knows now that it was wrong to go to war in Iraq. They know it's wrong to stay in Iraq. And 72% of America are in agreement with Dennis Kucinich. Let's go to the phones. Our good friend Rick joins us from Texas. Hey, Rick, welcome to the program.
Hello, Brother Bob.
How are you, Brother Rick?
Doing good. I called to bash a few wing nuts. I had no idea that the congressman was on. I tell you, your program is a vehicle of infinite delight.
Infinite other things sometimes too, Rick. But
God, it's amazing. I mean, my hero, the man. I can't believe it. I remember with my grandchildren sitting at my feet, we were watching the debate, and my grandson gets up and says, "You know, that Sharpton guy really makes me feel energized." Start running over the place, you know, like kids do. And then he sat down and he says, and he couldn't pronounce his name, but he said, "Percentage makes me feel hopeful."
He makes you feel proud to be an American, doesn't he?
Absolutely. And, of course, my granddaughter leaned over and said that he makes me feel smart because he isn't talking to me like I'm a dummy.
because these are principles that every American can get their head around.
I mean, if you can do that with kids, and he has the appeal to us, God, what a guy. Whatever he needs, he's got it. If he wants cash, contact me. If he wants someone to write his life story, contact me. If he wants someone to psychological warfare on his opponents, contact me.
Yeah.
If he wants boots on the ground, contact me. Anything he wants. He's my hero. He can make this country work. He can put us forward, and he can make a difference.
You know what? You know one thing I know that he'll need somewhere down the line, Rick? He will need a ballot representative, I'm guessing, in your congressional district in Texas. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. The way it works out here in West Virginia, the person goes on the primary ballot, but there's also an elector.
Oh, okay. No,
maybe not.
Yeah, they have the caucus set up so that people are elected in a general caucus to go forward to vote for certain people, and it's all political. I mean,
the spirit that you manifest is the spirit that he needs. He needs people. You know, at some point in time, I'm sure they'll need phone bankers.
We can make that happen.
You know, folks who can sit there and dial phones and get through to people and make them understand that he is the majority candidate. You know,
we can make that happen.
You know, maybe, I don't know, maybe Barack Obama will come around to say it's time to bring the troops home and defund the war. Maybe he will. But see, Barack Obama won't do that until he's had 9 dozen focus groups who finally tell him, you know, I think you need to get on message with this. You know, maybe Hillary will come around to it, but she's not there right now.
If they would get rid of the focus groups, they could probably do something. Barack Obama is a wonderful man. I mean, his speech just carried me to a new level. I mean, absolutely wonderful guy.
Yeah.
But you cannot adjust your message. And we learned that in the last election. You cannot adjust your message to what you think the focus groups want you to do. You got to say what you believe in, and then, like in Kucinich's position, when 70% of the people agree with him, they have to follow. They have to go.
Exactly.
Just say what you feel and quit lying, because a lie can be picked up so fast.
And don't be afraid of an idealistic America. You know, we got handed a bunch of fake idealism. I think of St. Ronnie and his shining city on the hill.
Yeah.
You know, that was just a bunch of political claptrap. Maybe I'm overly idealistic. Maybe I'm just downright giddy about it. But you know what? I see this, Rick, as the first honest idealism that we have had in American politics, maybe since John Kennedy.
And maybe, just maybe, it wasn't ready to be heard in 2004. Maybe it's time now. And if things keep going the way it is now, like with Murphy putting his ass on the line, excuse me.
Yeah.
And putting his stuff out there, and then the Democrats just backhand him out of a position that he should have been in. If that kind of stuff continues, we're going to need someone like Kucinich who's going to speak to the people. I'm not talking the base of liberals, which I'm one of. I'm not talking about the conservatives. I'm talking about the people, everybody, all at once. What he said tonight would ring true with everybody. There is an enormous amount of conservative Republicans right now losing their jobs in this hospital and their insurance, and they're still Republicans.
And right, and those, we've got to have a conversation with those people. And
what they're not hearing is you. What they're not hearing is Bruce. What they're hearing every single day is the same garbage from Limbaugh and the other idiots. That's the only thing that's on the radio here.
Well, you know, I know how they handle Congressman Kucinich. I mean, I've already seen the New York Times article and the Washington Post article, and I heard, you know, we couldn't get his message. It was hard to get his message out in 2004 because all the babbling dunderheads on TV would talk. It's the bachelor president.
Yes.
Who cares? Okay, he's married now. Now can we talk about issues?
What's the problem with being a bachelor?
I don't know. James Buchanan was.
Makes no sense whatsoever to me.
You know,
or being married. What difference does that make?
Right. And that's the thing. I don't know. I don't know where the solution is, Rick. I don't know what the solution is. But this short-sighted, attention deficit disorder approach to politics that we have has got to be reeled in, reined in, or brought to an end.
Read my my chapter on common sense in America. The only thing that you can do is slap them with reality and slap them with some intelligence, because we have dummied down society to the point that the only thing that they can take is bits and pieces. They're not going to listen to a man and analyze what he says on their own. They're going to listen to some talking head who's going to tell them what this person says and what this person means. And I guarantee you, mainline news is owned by rich people.
Sure it is.
People who want to take care of their little bankroll. And they want one thing to happen. They want their show to be number one. So they look for controversy. They look for something in a person who other people can get upset about. They're going to look for something.
Yeah.
Some kind of perceived weakness, and they're going to stretch it out.
Yeah, or fake controversy,
yeah.
Sure.
And you're going to have that all the time. You've got to be prepared for it, and you've got to slap back at them. It's okay to take a newsman to task. It's okay to take anybody to task when they get to the point that they are giving garbage out. If Al Gore would have stood up and said, hell yeah, I invented the Internet, or at least I funded it,
yeah,
more than you guys did. And by the way, I wanted it to be free to all Americans, not these corporations going in and taking it over. If he would have said that and knocked them down immediately, they wouldn't have been able to carry on that lie that he was going around saying that he wrote the codes and invented the Internet. As far as I'm concerned, the man invented the Internet. He gave it to us.
Yeah.
And it was taken away by politicians.
Well, you know, this is
a big business.
You know, we have an opportunity to reach out. It takes a brave man to sit down. Well, you know, the 23rd Psalm, thou hast prepared a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou hast anointed my head with oil, my cup runneth over. But then it says, surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. Okay, it takes a brave man, and it takes a confident man to be able to say, we must sit down at a table prepared for us with our enemies. Because the only way enemies ever stop being enemies is via diplomacy and via sincere conversation.
A dialogue,
exactly. I personally don't think Ahmadinejad wants to blow up Israel. You know, maybe in his fantasies he does, but the fact of the matter is,
politics over there.
Well, yeah, Greg Palast pointed it out very, very clearly several months ago that every time the price of oil starts slipping, Ahmadinejad comes out and screams, "Kill the Jews," and the price goes back up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's good for business over there, because anybody who studies, well, I'm not going to go off down the Iran path, but you know what, Rick, we got to sit down with them. We got to talk to them, because the alternative to it is unacceptable to us, and it is unacceptable to the world. And right now we've got people in power in Washington who, you know, I think in a way they're afraid. It's not that, oh, we don't negotiate with terrorists, you know, that crap.
They are afraid.
They're afraid. They're afraid that they're going to get shown up. The fact of the matter is, they are afraid that Ahmadinejad, being an engineer and a scientist, is probably, it's recognized throughout the White House that that man is smarter than George Bush.
Well, you know, probably his kids are smarter than George Bush.
I got a house cat that's smarter than George Bush, but I mean, you know.
Yeah, and he eats pies. Here in Texas, we just call them all biscuits.
Yeah.
Sorry. But, you know, if you don't, I mean, it's the old saying, keep your friends close and your enemies closer. You're not going to know what they're going to do. And there's no such thing as an enemy when you have been close enough to smell their breath. That's a Arab statement. If you're close enough to a person to know them, understand them. They have legitimate concerns, and we do too. We don't see their legitimate concerns, and they don't see our legitimate concerns. Whenever we're close enough and that we are giving each other the information that the other needs, we start to understand. The very first thing you do if you're kidnapped, you make yourself human. You talk about your wife, you talk about your kids, you talk about your work, you talk about everything in the world, they keep telling you to shut up. Make yourself human. If you have someone holding you hostage internationally, you make yourself and your country human.
Sure.
You cannot keep it as those brown people over there, because then it's just somebody we can bomb.
I've got this short list of really, really deadly words, and you know that, Rick. Mm-hmm. One of them is believe.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other deadly words is them.
Them, right. That's the first thing that a paranoid person says, by the way. Them. They are after me. You can always tell a paranoid person. And how do you treat a paranoid person? You go in there and you say, what are they trying to do? At least get them talking. Once you get them talking, even a demented paranoid person can see their way back to reality. They don't always follow it, but they can see it. We have to engage. We need to engage. It is American.
Well, to fail to engage at this juncture is suicidal.
Suicidal.
And you'll be the first to admit that maybe in some instances that's not a healthy impulse.
And on top of that, I'm not really sure that being suicidal is something Bush would be that averse to at this point. As long as it's America that's going to have to commit suicide.
Right, because as
anything that keeps them from losing.
Well, and anything that upholds the so-called conservative agenda, Rick. You know, the things that Congressman Kucinich was talking about: health care, daycare, education, restoring an America with hope and with a future. All the beauty of the Iraq War for the neocons and for the Grover Norquists of this world is that as long as we're throwing our blood and our treasure down that rat hole in Iraq, then we can't attend to the very most basic needs that will make America great again.
And that's exactly what they want. These people who supposedly love America more than liberals do have one thing on their agenda. And as Norquist said, to make a government small enough that you can drown it in a bathtub. The people who are swearing up and down that they love America are out to end the American government. I love that concept. And people fall for it.
Yeah. So, you know, that's...
You think that's not delusional, huh?
No, that's... And, you know, it's, and it's the question of, you know, how we let people hear from him. And that takes us back to the initial premise of our conversation. How we let people hear Dennis Kucinich is in we ourselves.
Absolutely. We must all be prepared. Every one of you, all the soldiers out there, as soon as somebody says anything at all, be prepared with the truth. You can always win with the truth. Get to know Kucinich. Get to know his platform. Get to know get to know the man, because he will show you who he is. I've never met him, but I could tell you an awful lot about him, because he doesn't hide who he is. Get to know the man, and the first time someone says, oh, he's just one of those crazy liberal people, throw the truth back to him. fine. He's a crazy, crazy liberal person. So why don't you pick the person who's going to starve to death? Why don't you pick the kid who isn't going to get medical treatment? Because Kucinich doesn't want any Americans to go hungry. Doesn't want any Americans.
And he wants little Iraqis to stop dying. And he wants us to stop causing little Iraqis to die.
He wants to get our soul out of hell because we have put it there following this maniac.
Yeah.
In this war.
Exactly. So, you know, is it worth it, Rick?
To work for him?
Yeah, is it worth the effort to just, you know, keep to learn the things that he's talking about, to go to the website, to read, to absorb the policy positions, to be able to discuss them on our own, to be able to tell other people about them? Is it worth it?
Definitely. Not only is it worth it, you need to do it. You need it for yourself. You got to have hope. We have spent, as Democrats, liberal, progressive, it doesn't matter, for the last 6 years, we have spent our life living in a hopeless situation. Read what he has. Get the hope. And get the word.
Because hope is contagious.
It sure is contagious. And truth is, too. And every time one of these morons repeats something that a talking head said, you hit them back. And they cannot stand up against you. Yes, go there. Don't even do that. I know we're all broke. I know we're all poor. But donate. That little bit of money does make a difference. It doesn't go into pockets. It doesn't go into anything that's wasted. It goes into keeping this man's face on the camera and his words truthful.
And eventually getting them into the American heart and the American mind.
Because his words are the same as ours. His heart and mind is the same as mine, same as Agnes's, same as yours, Bob, same as Gunny Bob out there and everybody else. His heart and mind is in the same place. If you read and you find that you differ, then differ on that. I think he's the man who will listen to you. And if he's proven wrong, he will change. He's not afraid of being wrong.
Well, you know, in the immediate future, I guess we've got another job to do that's outside of a presidential campaign, and it's very important to him, this notion of, you know, $160 billion more dollars.
Mm-hmm.
We've got congressmen. We've got senators. Stop it. Defund the war. You know, we're not talking about doing anything to the troops. Nobody's gonna make the troops go hungry. Defund the war. Bring the troops home. End it. Now.
You can bring the troops out by defunding it without jeopardizing any lives.
Well, the $70 billion that's already out there, Rick, like he said, we can bring every single member of the military home first class. On that kind of money.
He's right. And not only that, we can get the people out before we lose any more, because I promise you, every time you hear of another person dying, it is a senseless death. There is no sense in any person dying, and the ones who died today, I am so sorry if any family members are listening, but your son, your husband, your daughter, your child, your family member, has died a senseless death, and there is only one death in the world that should never happen, and that's a senseless one. Just like a life should be full of sense and direction, and when we go, our death is the same one. But to go over there and die for a lie, to die in a senseless war for a senseless cause, that person has to know that when that AK-47 slugs ripping through their body, they have to know, my God, what is this for? I got that from a person who's had an AK-47 blood going to his body, and that's what he thought. But his thoughts was, why? Why? What have I accomplished? What's been done? What are we doing other than maintaining so somebody doesn't lose face? Screw George Bush's pride. Take his pride and throw it out with everything else. These are human lives. These are God-given breath, humanity, who exist and are being wiped out for a lie, for vanity, for a useless cause.
Vanity, vanity, all is vanity. Oh, boy, I'm getting a little too deep into Wednesday night.
I really promise not to do this to you today, but I got excited with this finish. Please forgive me. I'm going to get off.
Well, thank you, Rick. I appreciate everything. I appreciate everything you've said, and I appreciate everything you do to make this a better place and a better network. Thank you.
Absolutely nothing. Just, it's fine. It's all done for myself. Because I got to hear y'all's voice.
Bless your heart. Thank you very kindly.
Thank you.
Take care, Rick. Our good friend Rick Goodner calling from Texas. You can go and you can read Rick's writing, especially with regard, he has a profound understanding of the media. It's called the Fox Syndrome. And it's available at Amazon. Rick Goodner, Goodner. A man of considerable observational powers. Look, it's time for the news. You want to get involved in the conversation, jump right in, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. That's how you get here. Your comments are always welcome. I'm Bob Kincaid.
The president's a fool. I don't want to get up early, and I wish I had a good stiff drink. I'm trying to be less polite. I want to call a spade. I want to stop the war because I know the war will send too many children to an early grave.
Quality News Network. President Bush continues to meet with military officials on his Iraq policy. Today he announced he would not be rushed into changes in strategy. 8 out of 10 Americans favor a change in Iraq war policy from a combat role to one of training. That's according to the most recent Washington Post ABC News poll. The Iraq war has now gone on longer than U.S. involvement in World War II. In and around Baghdad, at least 23 people were killed in attacks today. A car bomb blast during the morning rush hour killed 11 and wounded 27. The tortured and bullet-ridden bodies of another 21 people were found dumped throughout the city. The Washington Post reports the Army and Marine Corps will ask for permanent increases in personnel levels when incoming Defense Secretary Robert Gates takes office Monday. Senior officers say the current military strategy has demanded more resources than they have. In Washington, a federal judge today upheld the president's new terrorism law. It was the first legal challenge to the law denying Guantanamo Bay prisoners access to U.S. courts. Also in Washington, South Dakota Democrat Senator Tim Johnson has apparently suffered a stroke. If he dies or resigns, the Republican governor of South Dakota would appoint a replacement. Analysts say would likely be a Republican, which would create a 50-50 political party tie in the Senate. In the Gaza Strip today, a Hamas commander who served as a judge was killed by Palestinian gunmen. He was shot outside of the courthouse. Federal raids of 6 Swift and Company meatpacking plants in 6 states yesterday resulted in arrests of nearly 1,300 illegal immigrants from countries such as Mexico, Guatemala, El Salvador, Laos, Sudan, and Ethiopia. The company shut down nearly all of its U.S. operations since up to 40% of its workforce was eliminated by the raid. The crackdown was the largest such illegal immigration bust at a single company. At the UN, the General Assembly adopted a treaty to champion the rights of the disabled, a population estimated at 650 million worldwide. The agreement set a record for negotiation and consensus in the world body. Federal authorities now suspect lettuce may be the cause of a series of E. coli outbreaks at Taco fast food restaurants. Health officials are now tracking down the source of that shredded lettuce. Actor Peter Boyle has died suffering from heart disease and skin cancer. He was 71. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and the victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of rancor. You got married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Sky watchers should be able to spot 120 meteors an hour later this evening and into the early morning. The Geminid meteor shower climaxes tonight. A panel of experts in New York City warns the population may have grown so large by 2030 that rush hour traffic will last all day. In the next quarter century, the panel says another million people may be added to the city's 8 million. In November, the nation's retailers experienced a 1% increase in sales. That was the largest boost in 4 months. In general, department stores are faring better than discount stores, with the exception of Target, which is doing well. Federated Department Stores reported sales were up 8.5% last month. Target sales were up nearly 6%. The internet calling service Skype, owned by eBay, will soon begin charging its customers $30 a year for unlimited calls in the U.S. and Canada. The service has been free. A little over a year ago, eBay paid $2.5 billion for Skype. Light sweet crude is trading at $61.57 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. In trading today, the Dow Jones briefly hit the 12,368 mark, surpassing the intraday record set on November 22nd. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones was up 2 points at 12,317. The Nasdaq up 1 at 2432. S&P 500 up 2 at 1413. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
All right, we move into the final hour of tonight's program, and we will go back to the phones. Did you notice that? I hope we can talk about it a little later in the program. The blurb in the, well, not a blurb, but the mention, I suppose, in the top of the hour newscast about the first test of the heinous and unconstitutional law that forbids habeas corpus relief for people imprisoned under the new torture bill. I've got the follow up on that. Interestingly, the federal judge who heard it didn't quite get around to whether or not the damn law was constitutional. But you know, that's me. I'm just a mean guy. Let's go to the phones. Our good friend Timber calls in from North Carolina. Hey, Timber, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, nice to speak with you again.
Good to talk with you.
You were talking about with Mr. Kucinich and his bumper sticker is the only one I'll be putting on the back of my truck in 2008. But about the difference in the attitude toward Iraq between the grassroots and the Democratic leadership, and I think one problem is that the Democratic leadership has spent so much time just accusing Bush of being incompetent or of our invasion of Iraq being some sort of failure, that they've allowed people to continue to believe that we actually did go in there with good intentions and with under the auspices of international law and everything. And if you've ever seen this video for a song called If I Should Die Before You Wake, that's just a compilation of video clips of American soldiers holding Iraqi babies and Iraqi women holding purple fingers after voting and things like that. That is the image that a lot of people in both parties and on the grassroots have of what we claim, what we really were doing in Iraq. There's no discussion of our history with that region of the world. There's no discussion of our support for Saddam Hussein or the Shah or our ongoing support for people there now like Musharraf in Pakistan or Islam Karimov. I think he's in Kazakhstan. He might be in Uzbekistan, who are every bit as bad as the Shah or Saddam. We allow people to continue to believe that the military's cause is a noble and just one, and to me, I hate to say it, but I honestly believe that the reason you see 72% of people saying they want the troops out now is because it wasn't just a clear, one-sided win, and we didn't just go in and destroy that country and install a puppet dictator like we did with the Shah, or like we did with Saddam, who would impose their own police state on their people and prevent any American soldiers from having to do the policing for them.
So you're suspicious then of, if I understand what you're saying correctly, you're suspicious of the motives of some of that 72%.
Well, I think it's a case of them being mad about it, their team having a losing season and wanting a new coach.
Oh God, you know, I mean, I talk a little bit. You know, I mention from time to time that this ain't no damn football game. But it's there's in every possibility that you're correct, because we do. You know, we're still talking about. George came out today to talk about the war, and he said, "I've heard a lot of suggestions, and some of them are quite interesting, and others lead to defeat." You know, how do you have a meaningful debate about the validity of the war when the guy who is supposedly heading it still thinks that if he gets down to the 20 and kicks a field goal, everything will be okay?
I don't understand how we can pretend that this war on terror is some new invention that began on September 11, 2001, when Ronald Reagan declared a war on terror during his administration against the same Middle Eastern terrorists. They might not have been going under the banner of Al-Qaeda, but it was the same part of the world, the same religious ideology, the same political ideology, and that war was never declared a victory, and I think it's just being repackaged and resold to us all over again to maintain a military presence in that part of the world.
Well, exactly, and see, that's the reason I say bring them home, and I think that's because, and I think that's the reason a lot of other people put it that way too. I don't want them. I don't want our troops where they could conceivably be easily used by George Bush in another adventure.
But isn't that even what John Murtha is advocating? I mean, he's talking about withdrawing them from active combat duty in Iraq, but he's talking about maintaining a military presence
on the periphery,
a threat right outside of that region. What other nation in the world claims publicly that they have the right to hold a gun to the rest of the world's head, and that they have the right to pull that trigger as soon as our economic interests are threatened?
Well, do we have some sort of psychological block or ideological, I don't know, some sort of block that says that there's nowhere in the world that is allowed to say we're sick of Americans, we don't want Americans here, just get out and stay out? Because that there's a lot of the Middle East that wants that.
Well, it's my understanding that there's never been a popular uprising or an overthrow of a dictatorship that's been allowed to just continue or remain in place without the American military or the CIA becoming involved in a counter-revolution or a coup to put an American-friendly dictator or right-wing government.
Well, 1952 in Tehran is the perfect example. After all, there was a fledgling democracy there that we snuffed out. And, you know, it's an academic thing for us to talk about having, the Nixon administration having Allende bumped off, or the Eisenhower administration having Mohammad Mossadegh put under house arrest. But it's not an academic discussion for the people who had family that was butchered, killed, murdered, thrown out of airplanes at high altitude, that kind of thing, by the dictatorial, brutal, sickening, vicious dictatorial regimes that followed in the wake of those democratic movements. There's nothing academic about it. And so, you know, it doesn't come as any surprise to anyone who understands any portion of the history of those regions when we find out that at the same time the students who stormed the embassy in Tehran in, what, 1979, it's no surprise to us to find out that they were not just carrying posters of Ayatollah Khomeini. They were carrying every bit as many posters bearing the likeness of Mohammad Mossadegh.
Yeah, absolutely. And how often do we hear a recap of those events when we're talking about Iran these days and going through the same dog and pony show that led up to the Iraq War, where we're claiming that they're a threat to our national interests and that we somehow, apart from all other nations, have a right to preemptively change their government or invade their nation to remove any threat to us.
Well, it seems to me that all of that is what makes it so very, very important for those of us who are committed to peace to get behind somebody like Denis Kucinich.
I agree.
And you know, so yeah, I'm gonna make contact. I'm saying, hey guys, you got any stickers printed up yet? Because I want one for the back of the vehicle. I want to let people know that I do stand for peace. It matters to me. It's a stand and be counted thing. You know, I talk to some wingers from time to time, and they say things like, well, you know, George Bush really is your president. And I always respond, the hell he is. You know, the law that the United States of America established at Nuremberg says that you have to step away. You have to actively disavow yourself from war crimes and war criminals. Now, I'm sure that Congressman Kucinich would not speak in such strong terms, because they are probably counterproductive for the message that he is trying to get out. But you know what? I don't have a problem with it, Timber. I feel that it is moral. It is not just academic. It is moral. It affects my daily life to know whether or not people understand that I refuse to be counted among those who in any way, moral, philosophical, sociological, whatever, support George Bush. I won't do it. And I will not allow myself to be numbered accidentally among those who do.
Well, it's frustrating to me to hear people say that we have to undo 30 years of conservative fundraising and think tank building and organizing, because, I mean, there's no reason that liberals and the left shouldn't have been doing their own version of the same thing for the past 30 years. We had 2 years under Bill Clinton with a Democratic Congress to get a lot of work done, and based on my reading, we didn't really do buckus during those 2 years. And then, of course, Newt Gingrich and his counter-revolution created gridlock for the next six, or created cover for Clinton conservatives to implement their own third way new Democrat agenda.
Well, there's a lot of truth in that.
Because, I mean, when I talk to my friends who are liberals and try to explain to them my criticisms of Bill Clinton, they're under the impression that Bill Clinton was a great liberal, and the only thing he ever did wrong that people criticize him for is the Lewinsky scandal. They have no idea what actual policies were passed during those 8 years.
Well, you know, I got confronted in one regard. Someone said, well, can you please admit which administration put up the policy of regime change in Iraq? Hell yeah, that was Clinton administration.
Right.
You know, but by the same token, and I suppose this might be deemed splitting hairs, the Clinton administration didn't launch Shock and Awe. You know, it's kind of one of those odd little ironies. The regime change bill that he signed into law, he also issued a signing statement with.
Sure, and he turned down the PNAC boys.
Yeah, that signing statement said, we believe in regime change in Iraq, and we will try to effect it A, B, C, D, E. And nowhere in the laundry list that is in that signing statement is start a damn war. Now, on the other hand, I will remember the response of Madeleine Albright, and it's a real stomach-turner, Timber. She was told about the UN estimates of, what, 500,000 to 1 million Iraqi children who had died as a direct and proximate result of the sanctions that we put on Saddam, and they couldn't get basic necessities, they couldn't get medicines, they were out there dying of cancers that were brought about by depleted uranium, and the person asking Madeleine Albright said, well, you know, the sanctions have done all this, how do you feel about it? And she responded, well, all in all, I think it was worth it.
Yeah, of course she's recanted that and claimed over and over again since then that she denied.
Yeah, I didn't really say that. Yeah, you did, lady. I mean,
yeah.
Own it. You know, you it's yours. You know, and yeah, okay, good. She's recanted. Good. She's repented. But the fact of the matter is, there has been an attitude with regard to Iraq, and there's a lot of transference going on to Iran now, that says that anything we do to those countries, that they have somehow. And I'm not talking about the leadership. I couldn't care less about the leadership. I care about the guy herding the goats up the mountainside. You know, maybe that makes me a simpleton. But you know, the leadership somehow has earned our wrath. Screw the leadership. The people that we're going to kill haven't. We've killed 750,000 Iraqis. One of them is not Saddam Hussein.
Yeah, I don't get it. And like you said, we killed probably 500,000, maybe 1 million with sanctions. And it really is splitting hairs when you start having a philosophical discussion about whether it's better to die of starvation or a cluster bomb, and which death was more moral than the other.
Right. I mean, that's the kind of conversation that really, honest to God, crazy people have, Timber. You know, this business about, and you know, it's all over again. Oh, Iran wants to have a nuclear weapon so they can blow up Israel. The very minute that Iran has one nuclear weapon, they will be 100 nuclear weapons behind Israel. Now, what kind of dumbass goes into a fight with those odds?
It's ironic that the same people who claim that if everybody had a gun, we'd all be much safer, don't have that opinion when it comes to other countries having a right to their own self-defense with a viable military threat right on their doorstep.
Yeah, because the Iranians know the Israelis have 100 nuclear weapons. They also know that some of them are targeted on Tehran. Now, if you knew that, would you want your own?
Absolutely.
You know, because this is, and it's so foolhardy. This is just, it's just deterrence. It's the same reason that the United States and the Soviets built enough nuclear weapons to destroy this world and several more, because it was you got them, we got them. If you use them on us, we're using them on you. Mutual assured destruction. You know about it. That was the formal name of the policy. And yet, you know, there are people out there who have an agenda that sometimes it doesn't seem fully clear. They want an attack on Iran. You know, this is Wednesday night prayer meeting. There are crazy fundamentalists out there who think that if we can just get the nukes flying, Jesus comes back. And, you know, wow.
Yeah, I don't know. I know you're a busy guy, but if you have a chance, you ought to go to C-SPAN. See if you can find in the archives. Sam Harris did a really good presentation to the New York Society for Ethical Culture, I think it's called. And it was just basically a summation of his book, The End of Faith. And that was one of his points, is that we've gotten to the point where religion, whether you're talking about fundamentalist Islam or fundamentalist Judaism or fundamentalist Christianity, are the threats to the world that they claim to want to say, because they provide rationalization for things that otherwise would just seem completely insane.
Yeah, otherwise we couldn't. Absent these people, we could have a sane discussion about things. But every time you start trying to talk about the real world politic involved with trying to avoid nuclear conflagrations and things like that, you've always got without fail some fundy will come in and say, "That's what we need to bring Jesus back."
Absolutely,
it's crazy talk.
I wanted to take issue with one thing that that Rick said. I always enjoy his calls and learn a lot. But he said that he thinks that cons like Grover Norquist, and I'm familiar with Grover Norquist. I used to do a lot of reading about libertarianism, and some days I call myself a left libertarian because which is a completely different thing from Grover Norquist. But they don't want to eliminate government. They want to eliminate the parts of government that help people. They don't want to do away with a military that can protect corporate interests around the world. They don't want to do away with the part of government that supports the Fortune 500 with subsidies and tax breaks and all that. They just want to eliminate the parts that...
Right, and they want the planes to fly on time, and they want their garbage picked up. They just don't want to pay for it.
If they're state socialists, in spite, no matter what they say about it being socialism to let somebody have $7,000 a year and welfare to help put food on the table, they want $7 million a year given back to corporations that might have paid no taxes in the first place and have millions and millions of dollars in profits every year.
Well, and that's what makes such hypocrites of them. You're right. You know, the wealthiest people in this nation, you know, oh, why do they got to pay more taxes? The wealthiest people in this nation have experienced the greatest benefits from what this nation offers. They could not be wealthy without the military that protects them, and the various legal structures that make sure that their personal and real property rights are guaranteed and protected. And so it seems only natural and rational to me that they should actually pay for it. I mean, is that just crazy?
I don't understand the person who can't think of anything better to do than complain about having to pay the taxes on the $1 million they made in a single year.
Amazing. It's just amazing. Timber, it's always good talking to you. You doing all right?
Bob.
You okay? Lost timber. Sounded like he maybe had a little bit of a cold. Love hearing from you guys. This is, dang. This is why we call it conversation radio. This is what makes it so special. Let's keep rolling. Luke is joining us from Knoxville, Tennessee. Hey, Luke, welcome to the program.
Evening, Bob.
How are you?
Well, I was kind of sad hearing about Peter Boyle.
Yeah.
I tell you, the one you played was good, but I tell you what, I still think the funnier scene in that movie is him and Gene Hackman.
Which one?
Oh, the old man in the forest.
Oh, yeah. You know, that's so funny because we were listening to the clip, and toward the end of it, I looked over at Agnes and said, come back. I was going to make espresso. But that's such a visual scene. It's hard to make it work on radio. You know, Peter Boyle sitting there with his thumb on fire, you know, trying to light his... my God. And you know, that's the...
Well, I feel like they're trying to get the bowl underneath the ladle.
Oh. yeah.
And then you just get that look on his face for like, oh.
But, you know, and along with that, the very simple, yeah, just makes me laugh thinking about it.
Then the scenes with him and Madeline Kahn.
Oh, yeah, after, honey, we've got to go to dinner tomorrow.
That whole movie is just a classic. It really is.
Well, it's brilliant, and it's made brilliant not necessarily by the lead roles, like, I mean, Gene Wilder is a genius and was brilliant in the film, but the real brilliance comes from the Peter Boyles and the Madeline Kahns.
Of course, Leachman and Terry Garr.
Booker.
And Kenneth Mars. Oh.
Oh, yeah, the police...
Commandant, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But now let's get on to...
riot is an ugly thing.
Yeah.
Sorry. I said
like
a riot is an ugly thing.
The throw in the dart.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay. Let's see. I tell you the thing that gets me is that the rodeo cowboy we see has now put this thing off till after the first of the year. And you're sitting there going, you know, his speech, and you're sitting there going, you do realize that after the first of the year, there's going to be 3,000 dead people in Iraq. Dead American soldiers. That number's coming up soon.
Mm-hmm.
Now, like I said, they're going to hang that number around his neck, I think.
Well,
once it crosses that number, I think not significantly, but I think that the pressure's going to go up.
Well, that's also waiting till the Democratic Congress is there, and so you, as a consequence of that, you also get, and I think this is part of the calculus. He gets an opportunity to blame obstructionist Democrats.
Well, you've heard...
Because the criticism will then be coming from a Congress that is no longer a majority party, his own party. Then it'll be, well, you know, they don't support the troops. That's why they're opposing my genius plan. That's my guess on it, Luke.
Well, you want to talk about that. You heard about the... You saw the thing the other day with DeLay, where he was on there, and he was blaming it all on the Democrats.
Oh yeah,
on his fall from power, and it's like this morning.
Yeah, because I never took a secret trip to Scotland for a secret trip for a secret golf match. Oh God.
Well, of course that's where they were doing their high security workers out there on the course. Of course, you know how that is. But
Well, but you know, this blog of his that he's come out with, and now he's admitted that he doesn't even write it. Yeah. You know. Not that we ever expected his typing finger could do anything in the way of a more than, you know, sentence and a half post. But I did love it. They interviewed Tom DeLay and said, oh, yeah, I'm not really much of a writer. Not much of a thinker either, Tom, but that didn't keep you out of Congress, buddy.
Like I was, Mike Malloy always says, he says, I still see Tom DeLay as the Frank Booth character. You know, with a little tank of air. You know?
Yeah.
He said, except in DeLay's DeLay's version, that's probably a tank of Malathion. You know, that he's been sitting there sucking on for years, killing brain cells.
Bug spray DeLay.
No, but like I say, I saw something the other day. Somebody was talking about it. Was one of the Republicans was playing his revision. Oh, I've been against that. You know, since the statue. Boy, it was O'Reilly.
Yeah.
But yeah, and I was sitting there going, you know, I wish that, and MSNBC hasn't got the guts to do it, but you really wish MSNBC late at night, instead of running one of their doc blocks, would start mm-hmm. running the old Donahue show.
Yeah.
Just to remember what people were saying before we went in. You know, it's like, here's what you said, you know, 3-4 years ago when you said, you know, it was going to be nothing. You know, we'll be...
Well, you know, but my favorite O'Reilly quote, Luke, is where he said, if we go to this war and it doesn't turn out well, and I'm paraphrasing, then I will never trust the Bush administration again.
Oh, I remember that, and everybody, and they held him up to him when it happened, and he was like, oh, yeah, yeah, and it lasted about a week.
Well, you know, but what
like,
do we...
Oh, I've never said that. No.
But, you know, and that's the thing. It's not necessarily a political opposition. These people engage in this crap for ratings. It's one of the beauties of what we do here. I don't have to worry about that kind of thing. But the opposition to the common sense that Dennis Kucinich speaks will not come in the form of legitimate bona fide opposition to an idea. It'll come in the form of, did you know he bankrupted Cleveland?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the fact of the matter is, these dummies don't even bother to look at the story and find out that that Cleveland was profoundly grateful to Dennis Kucinich for not selling out municipal power and light. They've got a muni power and light now because of Dennis Kucinich, because he wouldn't turn it over to the, you know, Dennis didn't drive Cleveland into bankruptcy. The banks drove Cleveland into bankruptcy.
Well, you know, I was sitting there wondering about it when Agnes told me you had him on, we're going to have him on and all that. And I'm sitting there going, one thing you wonder is, like, this coming weekend, how many shows do you think he'll be on the Sunday morning talk show?
I can do that real. I can do the math real fast. None. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like, say, if you got somebody who's just announced for president, Tim Russert should have him on for at least half the show. You know, and sit there and talk with him about what his ideas are.
And by God, if he did, Tim Russert would ask some real hard questions.
Oh God! And it'd be one of those questions like, you know, he wouldn't let him.
Yeah, it'd be 30 solid minutes of, when did you stop beating your wife?
Oh gosh!
Because that's the way he operates. That's the way all of these thugs operate. I hate, you know. I started hearing about Meet the Press on Sunday mornings when my grandmother was living with us, and we would watch it, and she'd say, "Son, you better pay attention to this. This actually matters." And I can't even remember who Meet the Press was back then, but it was deadly dull, and it was black and white, and it was nothing. I promise you, nothing that a 7-year-old wanted to watch. But I still, you know, Gran said to do it, and I sat down and watched, and I learned. But it's not that's not what it is anymore.
No.
This is agenda-driven, with an agenda that no one who's never known a bad acid trip can't fully comprehend.
That's true. I hadn't thought about it that way. I really might make it come out a little bit better.
No, that's it. No, not on mushrooms. Maybe not. No, I'm kidding.
Oh no. You know, this time it'll be the brown acid. But you know what I mean? Sometimes when you're sitting there watching, you just kind of want to hold up the sign. It's like, when do you get to ask the Republicans these questions? You know, next week you have the Republicans. Can you ask them these same questions just for the fun of it?
Yeah, if it's not too much trouble. No, that's too much trouble. Exactly.
Oh.
Luke, take it easy. Good to hear from you.
Right.
Have yourself a great night.
Okay, now.
Bye now.
Bye.
And we're going to go over to our good friend Ben Birch, who has some breaking information about Senator Tim Johnson.
Yeah, KITV News is reporting that a spokesman said late Wednesday that Tim Johnson did not suffer a stroke or heart attack, but he is still being evaluated by the stroke team. It says he became disoriented during a telephone conference call with reporters this morning. While he was able to walk back to his office in the Hart Senate office building, he wasn't feeling well, and an ambulance later took him to George Washington Hospital. So they're saying it was not a stroke or a heart attack.
Well, thank God for that.
Okay.
You
so,
know, that's...
You know, there are numbers of other things that can make you feel disoriented and give you stroke-like symptoms, including migraine headache.
That's true. That's true. And, you know, he is a cancer survivor already.
And, yeah, hopefully it's not a recurrence of that, but in any case, it doesn't appear to be a stroke.
Good. Well, thank you for the update, Ben.
You're very welcome.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye now. That is encouraging, without a doubt. It's and you know, let's be for certain, it's encouraging to know, for the sake of his family and those who love him, that they're not going to lose him to a stroke, or that he's not going to be debilitated to a stroke. Now, you know, after that, we say things like, it's encouraging from a political standpoint. We got our priorities straight? I hope so. Our good friend Jim Yancey is joining us from southern Mississippi. Jim, thanks for calling the program.
Hey, Bob. Good to hear you. Boys.
How are you doing?
Well, fortunately, we're like the old saying, busier than a one-legged man in a kicking contest, but we're still going after it.
Well, and this has got to be a tough time of year in your business, even under the best of circumstances.
Well, the South Mississippi, I lived up in Washington State for a number of years, but we're used to the cold weather up there, but we were down in the 20s last week most of the time. Unfortunately, it's warmed back up in the 60s, so it was rough going for a while.
Well, you know, you're actively involved in trying to help people who are still made plenty miserable by the aftermath of Katrina. Have you seen this story about the federal judge's response to the administration's handling of the housing programs for Katrina?
Is that where they've extended? Okay, I mean, is that where they've told the government to extend the payment?
Well, a federal judge dressed down the federal government today.
Excellent.
U.S. District Judge Richard J. Leon. Spoke in a speech to Michael Sitkov, who represents the government. He said, "Let me make this clear. Tell FEMA that I'm expecting them to get going on this, like, immediately." And what this is in regard to is his holding that FEMA had violated evacuees' constitutional rights by eliminating their housing payments without notice. And he said they weren't moving fast enough to restart the program for somewhere between 3,600 and 5,500 storm victims.
I believe it. It's the red tape of the government it's like a faucet, and by the time it gets down on the coast, Louisiana, well, I can only speak the Mississippi Gulf Coast, but I'm sure it's the same problem in Louisiana, it's just barely dripping out. Somewhere it started like a regular flow. And here we are 16 months into this mess, and what the folks need is the faucet to flow so we can get the hay out of the barn, down on the ground, so the cows can eat it, which is the money down here, so we can fix these problems. And it's not. It just continues to drip out.
Well, how are people getting through the holiday season? Like I said, under the best of circumstances, for anybody in social services, this is a tough time of year, Jim.
Well, it is. This is always the time between Thanksgiving and Christmas where people are made aware of the have and have-nots, what they do have and what they don't have. I had a guy show up at my office last night, needed to ride over to the Salvation Army. We put him over there in a shelter with about 50 other people because it was pouring down rain, plus it was cold. I went to a lady's house early this morning. They had sheetrocked her house. God love them, a church group had, but they had not taken out the electrical wiring, so we got to tear the sheetrock out. And we had a contractor come in, and there's a lot of good contractors here, but we had another contractor come in months ago, and he put new shingles on top of her old shingles. He never took the old shingles off. So her house is leaking like a sieve. So it is, sometimes it's two steps forward and three back. We had a suicide call last week I went out on. So it's a difficult time. And the kind of paradox of it is, or the dichotomy is, you have folks here in Jackson County that have moved on and are back in their homes, and that's good, but we've still got a lot of folks here that are either still in a FEMA trailer. In South Mississippi, we still have just under 80,000 people in FEMA trailers.
80,000?
That's what I was told this morning.
God almighty.
And that's in the six coastal counties. In Jackson County, I think the count is 8,000. We're just under 8,000 FEMA trailers. And then you've got folks that are in a FEMA trailer trying to get back in their home. So. And then you've got folks that are already back in their home, so we've kind of got folks are at three different places. And the rule to get back in your home, if you've been in a FEMA trailer, is if you can get the electricity on, get a bed in there and get your a sink and a bathtub or a shower, then you can kind of move back in your house. That's what a lot of folks do because they're just tired of living in a small FEMA trailer. Let me give you some good news.
Yeah, please.
Sorry. We have, since I've talked to you, I've been on the radio two or three other times, so folks have been sending three things down here, actually. They've been sending us some money, which is what we call the hay up in the barn, which the government seems to be holding on to, but it's getting down to us. It's coming down. The second thing is we have a volunteer center over here that we've had, but it's up and running, and we gladly welcome more volunteers to come down because that's what saved us the first time around this thing.
Volunteer who? What kind of volunteers, Jim?
Okay, volunteers can be college students. It can be faith-based folks. It can be organizations. But we have a place here in Pascagoula. It's our old high school gymnasium. We can hold about 100, 150 volunteers a night. We ask them to pay $6 a day, and that feeds them three meals. And then we put them to work every day.
Well, what kind of work?
Okay, well, it may be going up and putting sheetrock in. It may be if we've got folks that we've got guys that are trained in putting up shingles on a roof, we'll put them on roofing. If we've got somebody that's trained in electrical work, we'll do that. When a lot of it is just clean up in the yard still. But a vast majority of it is still tearing out sheetrock and putting up sheetrock.
Well, that's a tough business, and you need all the help you can get.
Yeah, and then the third thing we've got a warehouse down here now, and we've got folks. We had a lady from Michigan that sent a trailer load full of furniture in pretty good shape, and she had asked 18 families for us to identify 18 families and specific needs of furniture, and we sent that list to her, and so she sent the furniture down to us.
Holy cow, that's wonderful.
Which was really incredible. So, we have our really good days some days, and sometimes we have our really bad days.
Physically, Jim, how are you coordinating this? I mean, how do people get in touch with you and say, look, I can help this way?
Okay, well, for the Volunteer Center, I can give you the number to that.
Okay.
It's 228.
All right.
712-2669.
228-712-2669, correct?
Yes, and if they call between the hours of 8 and 5 Central Standard Time, Monday through Friday, you're going to get a person there. There's always people there, but we've got what we call our NCCC folks, which are college students, young adults. They've just been doing a fantastic job. They come down for 6 weeks, and they're kind of like the Peace Corps. And these kids, particularly since a lot of our volunteers have left, I think the word quit getting out that we need volunteers. They've come in, and they're in each of the three coastal counties. They've just done a great job. So that's how to get call in. And, you know, if you want to bring a family or a group down for a week, well, we'd love to have you. And then the second thing is the warehouse is just contact me at my office, area code 228-522-1965. And we have some motels and hotels that have sent us furniture that's a couple years old that's in pretty good shape. We've had appliances come in, anything like that that we can put. We've had shingles, paint, had a lot of paint come in recently. Furniture come in that was pretty good shape. Some of it's brand new. We put that in the warehouse, and then we send the case manager out into the field to locate a person, or that person may come into our volunteer center. And then we'll go do a house check to verify that that's actually what they need. And then when we put those two pieces together, they come over to the warehouse with their case manager, and they pick up their items and take it back to their house.
You mentioned the weather when we started talking. Is the weather cooperating down there right now? I mean, even hauling sheetrock can be a problem if you're in rainy conditions.
That is a problem. We hauled 40 sheets a couple days ago over to guy's house and got it off of the trailer just as it started raining. So it hasn't rained that much down here, which is good. It's more drier than usual, but yeah, we have to kind of work around the weather. The big thing for us recently has just been the cold weather, because like I say, when it's 25, 30 degrees in South Mississippi, the cold just cuts you to the bone. And I can remember living up in Washington State when it was 25 or 30, and it was more of a dry cold, not a wet cold.
Well, when my father moved from West Virginia to Alabama, he swore that he was colder in 35 degrees down there than he'd ever been in zero up here.
Yeah, well, I agree. I attest that because it can be 45 degrees down here, and it feels like
there's a lot of wet to it and water getting blown in off the Gulf, and that goes clean to the bone.
That's right. So, but we've still got folks that have fallen through the cracks. Every time I think I've heard something, I find something else. But we had a lady, we located seven senior citizens living in seven trailers last week, and we found a lady up in Jackson, Mississippi, that has donated some money to make sure they get fed every day. So that's the kind of stories that's going on down here.
And there's no getting around the fact. I mean, you do have some good news, but you are still, Jim, in the middle of a humongous uphill battle, are you not?
Yeah, we are, and there's no doubt about it. And I know people up north are probably aggravated because they've given money to the large national organizations. But just that the problem is, by the time it gets to the local organizations down here, it at times is like a drip in the bucket.
Well, it's the exact opposite of pressed down and shaken together, isn't it?
Exactly. And
spread out and shaken loose.
Exactly. And what we need right now is we need three things. We need money on the ground. We need resources and volunteers and in-kind donations, which is furniture and appliances, things like that.
And you know this, you know, people. This is America. We don't necessarily get rid of the refrigerator when the refrigerator quits refrigerating.
Right.
We get rid of the refrigerator when we get tired of looking at avocado color.
That's right.
And
right.
You know what? That's a perfectly serviceable fridge for somebody who had theirs washed out to sea.
That's right.
So, you know, it's worth remembering and worth thinking about. What is the website again, Jim?
It's www.jccsc.org.
And are there some of the stuff we've been talking about, is there greater description there for how to help, who to contact, that kind of thing?
Yeah, you can go to the site where it talks about on the donate side, and it goes into pretty good detail on what we need down here, and they can contact me by email or my office by email, and but we're out in this mess every day, so it is an uphill battle. Another problem has been just the disconnect from the government side. I'm not. You know, even our own state government, which has done a lot of good, 180 miles north of us, I think sometimes they just have moved on.
Well, I'm looking at this Associated Press story, and this has to do with, termination notices that went out to thousands of people. And it's a horror story. Apparently, God, I would not have wanted to bend that government lawyer that got dressed down by Judge Leon. Because the guy came in and wanted to make excuse. Our computer system's 8 years old, and well, you know, we can't. All it does is generate codes. And the judge looked at him and said, "Look, pay overtime, bring people in, work them on the weekend. 10 people working 20 days can get those letters out and translate the daggum codes. Stick it in an envelope, lick the envelope, put a stamp on it, and send it. This is unacceptable."
Well,
this isn't an exception to the rule. This kind of operation is the rule.
Yeah, apparently it is. Look, it's kind of like a lady up in Jackson told me, three or four months ago. We sent a grant up there, and we need this grant, desperately need it. And I signed off on it, which usually means if I sign off on a grant, the money's coming. Well, it's still sitting somewhere, and I told the lady, I said, what's the deal with the grant? Well, the first time I talked with her, she said, well, you just don't understand what's happened up here because of Katrina. And I said, y'all are 180 miles north of us. She said, I'm sorry, Mr. Yancey, we've lost your grant request.
Oh, jeepers.
So I said, look, I will get you one tomorrow. And so we put it back in the process. We're still on hold, but this is the problem. The problem is that we don't need to operate on an 8-to-5 basis. Because we are running out of time. And the best example I can think of is that what we're hearing is it's going to take 5 to 7 years to build back the coast. Let me tell you what, we don't have 5 to 7 years. We can put this thing back together in 18 months if they will give us the resources to do it. Now, maybe folks think I'm crazy, but that's, you know.
Well, the fact of the matter is, too, Jim, you dodged a bullet this hurricane season.
We did, but we're not going to have 5 to 7 years and work through another couple of seasons with what we hear about the forecast. We can get this stuff done, but we've got to have the resources to do it, and we've got to have it down here on the ground to do it. That's the problem, and I'm just telling you from a guy that's been on the ground from day one, it's not going to take 5 to 7 or 4 years to do this. We can get the majority of it done, particularly get the people back in their bloody homes within 18 months and probably quicker.
And all it takes
are three things.
Yep. Money.
Money. It takes volunteers, and it takes in-kind resources, which are the furniture, appliances, that kind of stuff. And folks just need to get their giddy-up on, and I'm telling you, we can get after this. And yeah. And I know it's a frustrating thing, but it's like I tell people, I said, you know, this is the largest natural disaster. And, you know, it's not going to be the last one, you know.
Well, there's a learning curve here, and frankly, our ability to meet the needs in this disaster speaks to our ability to meet the needs in the next one, and the learning that has gone on here makes it more likely that we can adequately respond the next time through. Katrina doesn't have to happen again, Jim.
Amen. That's exactly right. But for some reason, I never saw the movie, but from what people tell me, it reminds me of Groundhog Day. We just keep getting the same repetition over and over. And
I think about the physical process of Katrina heading for the Gulf Coast. You know, it wasn't flying. It wasn't zooming along. There's a scene in one of the Austin Powers movies where a guy is standing in front of a big steamroller thing, and it goes back and forth, you know, and he's screaming.
Yeah.
And then you get the long shot, and the damn steamroller is 100 yards away. And that's, you know, that's what we dealt with Katrina. And frankly, you know, I imagine that you, Jim, are probably not that interested in being taken away from your work to go and testify in a hearing. But one of the things that's going to have to happen, hopefully with this new Congress, is that we're going to make some diligent inquiry into why this happened the way it did. We've got to learn from that, or, you know, the next natural disaster could very well make Katrina look like a day in the park. And I'm not trying to be a smart aleck about that, because I know it wasn't, and I know it still isn't.
Well, the problem is if we repeat what we've just done, and we will get another big one. It may be when the ground rattles up in on the west side of our beloved country in California up there, or the Ring of Fire up in Washington, Oregon, who knows, or the East Coast, you know, who knows. But we're going to bankrupt our country if we keep doing this, pouring money into places. Or I'll give you a good example. Our Board of Supervisors down here had a company that I think the Corps had hired called Ashbrit. And Ashbrit came in to remove debris. And they were removing it so slow, our Board of Supervisors got so frustrated with it, they fired them. And they had our own folks, our own county folks, do it and did it really good.
Well, sometimes that's what you have to do.
And it was a contract that it just was moving extremely slow. And it took five guys that said, okay, we're going to have to come up with something else. And they did. And if we don't learn the lessons from this, when the next one comes, wherever it hits in our country, we are going to come out of resources quick. Plus, the one thing that folks have is when you can offer them help, you offer them hope. And, you know, what we don't need now, particularly with all the stuff going on over in Iraq and all the different problems that our country encounters, what we don't need now is more and more pessimism. Because that just breeds a whole lot of other things.
Oh, it breeds defeat.
Exactly. And there is a way to get through this. It's kind of like I was talking to one of our long-term recovery folks the other day, and they said, well, you know, we're in this thing for the next 5 to 7 years. And I said, let me explain something to you. I am into sustaining my coalition that I'm in charge of, you know, for the long term. But I'm not into sustaining long-term recovery work. I want to get in and get this thing done with. There's a big difference there. It's one thing to sustain your business, your corporation, or your small business or large business. It's something else to try to sustain this. This does not need to be sustained. And now we've got folks coming down here wanting to sustain long-term recovery because guess what? There's money in it.
Oh, God.
So that's another problem.
Oh, look, the profit motive. You need that like you need another storm. No, get done and get on with it. Sure.
Exactly.
I'm right there with you. Jim, thank you so much.
Well, bro, I appreciate you having me on.
Oh, it's my absolute pleasure. Anytime. You take care.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Well, there it is. They need money. They need the sweat of your brow. And, you know, if the old avocado refrigerator or stove has finally just gotten on your last nerve, and you know what, find a way to get it to Mississippi. And it is doable. We talked about this one night. Trucking companies for the PR will give away the give away the deadhead load. Yeah. All right, one last thing before we roll on. The federal judge today did, in fact, uphold the torture bill. God knows why. Maybe we'll get to that tomorrow. But the other one, the other story that's out there, and I hope somebody covers it in greater depth, these raids on so-called illegal aliens being perpetrated by the Department of Homeland Security. Do you know what they did? These are raids out of Utah. One of them at a Swift meat processing plant aimed at rounding up illegals. They got the dark-skinned Hispanics in one group, and they put the light-skinned people in another group, and automatically made a determination that the illegals were most likely in the dark-skinned group. Now, CNN commissioned a study that came out yesterday about racism in America that probably we deserve. I don't know. I'll try to maybe make this the front end of the program tomorrow. But Homeland Security rounded these people up. Guess what? A bunch of the dark-skinned people were not only Americans. Only Americans. Oh, my God. Where are we? They were union members. Union members. You know, there are workers who are busting their hides trying to bring union representation into a kill plant for Smithfield Meats in Tar Heel, North Carolina. Well, out in Utah, Maria was rounded up as she was going on break at Swift. And they were forced to stand in a line by Homeland Security immigration agents. Non-Latinos and people with lighter skin were plucked out of the line and given blue bracelets. The rest, mostly Latinos with brown skin, waited until they were cleared or arrested by La Migra for the immigration people. Maria said, "I was in the line because of the color of my skin. They're discriminating against me. I'm from the United States and I didn't even get a blue bracelet." She was one of hundreds of plant employees targeted by federal agents. Now, you just heard Jim Yancey talk about what they need because they don't want to sustain the rebuilding. They want to get it done. This is a soulless executive branch. They've got the resources to go and make sure the weenie makers are Americans, and they can't... We'll try to focus on this a little bit tomorrow, because there is a war on working people in this country, and this is proof of it. Oh, you're dark. You must be an illegal alien. No, I'm sorry. The union card won't do for identification, lady. You don't get a blue bracelet and no fruit cup. Jiminy. Where do I live? That's it. I wish we had more time. Honest to God, this is one of those nights I could do another 3 hours. Agnes couldn't do another 3 hours. Agnes is giving me a withering glance. But after all, she did a wonderful, wonderful job this evening producing the program. Many thanks to Congressman Kucinich for calling in. Yeah, that was very exciting. It's nice to get hope. John Fox is our engineer in Sydney, Australia. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the streams, the archives, and the podcasts of all the programs on the Head On Radio Network. And he does so without sending a bill. Do the right thing. Peter Godbold of Godbold Computer Services in Tallahassee, Florida, is our IT professional. And a darn fine teacher, I might add. Get better, Peter. Every program on the Horn happens because there are several thousand members of the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters and Millwrights, and they get up every day and they go out and they build the American dream. And in supporting this network, they're helping to save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.
the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Quality News Network. The president continues his so-called listening tour to hear advice on how to possibly change course in the Iraq war. He is now expected to deliver a speech to the nation about any policy changes in January, not by Christmas, as was earlier expected. President Bush met with Iraq's Sunni Vice President Tariq al-Hashimi today in Washington. He also heard from senior military commanders in Iraq via video conference. The latest ABC News Washington Post poll finds that 7 out of 10 Americans disapprove of how President Bush is handling the Iraq war. Also, 6 in 10 state that the Iraq war was not worth fighting. In a main square in central Baghdad today, at least 63 people, mostly day laborers looking for work, were killed by two car bombs that exploded nearly simultaneously. As many as 200 people were wounded. Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki, a Shiite, blamed the attack on the Sunnis. An Associated Press cameraman was shot to death today in the northern city of Mosul. He is the third AP employee to be killed while covering the Iraq war. The Committee to Protect Journalists says that at least 89 journalists have been killed in Iraq since the war began. The Israeli Supreme Court today ruled that Palestinians could seek compensation from Israel for damages caused by the Israeli army. The court today unanimously threw out a law that prevented the Palestinians from seeking compensation if they have been harmed by Israeli combat operations. The Saudi ambassador to the United States, Prince Turki Al-Fazal, abruptly resigned today after only 15 months on the job, turned back home to Saudi Arabia to spend more time with his family, according to diplomatic sources. In 6 U.S. states today, federal agents raided meat processing plants as part of an immigration raid. An unknown number of illegal immigrants were arrested. They are suspected